You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
Children International is working to end child poverty around the world by giving kids access to a safe place, a team, and a path out of poverty by focusing on health, education, empowerment, and employment. Together with people like you, we're more than a nonprofit. We're a powerful force for change. Learn more at children.org.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, November 11th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday. In the post-2016 era, in the post-11-8 era of America. On the program today, Cliff Schechter, film guy Matthew. Also on the program today, Keith Ellison's not even announced campaign for DNC chair gets a big boost in the past 12 hours. Harry Reid on setting the example for how Democrats should view Donald Trump. The KKK also setting an example on how we should view Donald Trump by celebrating his election with a parade. More on what went wrong and on what next. Lastly, DNC Zach, perhaps the best thing that has come out of the DNC in years. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. I feel like we may have to, at one point during our election coverage at like, I don't know what time it was. Maybe like at 12:30 at night, I got a text from my neighbor, and he's like, this honestly changes everything. He says, it feels like 9/11 all over again in some respects. Now, obviously, it's different, and in many respects, this was a function of 9/11 in many respects. But in terms of it fundamentally changing this country, for decades upon decades, it has equal resonance, perhaps maybe more, and in some respects, less opportunity to redirect than we had after 9/11. Now, with that said, those of us who want to change the course that we're set on, I think are a lot more savvy about how to do it and about the need to do it and not simply hoping that there'll be a course correction on its own. Does that make sense of what I'm saying there? That
makes total sense.
And that, there are many opportunities where we could have done something different following 9/11 as a country or as a left or center left movement, that there was not the urgency wasn't there, or we relied on other people to do it, or I don't think that's going to happen this time. I'm somewhat encouraged by that. Let me read what Harry Reid said today. And, you know, I am one of those people who have a different perspective than many on the efficacy of Harry Reid over the years. And part of that is because I think I know many people who worked for him and who were skeptical going in, and coming out had a different perspective in terms of what was going on behind the scenes. He was typically not a guy who would go out there, and I think, you know, I mean, he's not a charismatic guy, at least when you see him on television. And I think he was aware of that, and there was very few times where he would, but, you know, he was the guy who basically came out and said, you know, Mitt Romney's, I mean, he was willing to do things from a political standpoint. He was willing to fight very hard. And sometimes, you know, to use the boxing analogy, he's a boxer. Sometimes he had what seemed to be a dubious article embedded in his boxing glove, in terms of like he was more interested in winning, I think, in certain instances than he was in maintaining certain decorums. So he released a statement this morning on Donald Trump. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's a little bit long to read, but I'm going to just select portions so you get the idea of it. I've heard many stories. I've heard more stories in the past 48 hours of Americans living in fear of their own government and their fellow Americans than I can remember hearing in 5 decades in politics. It's the first paragraph. And he talks about Hispanic Americans, African Americans, Muslim Americans, immigrants. Right. So I have a large family. I have 1 daughter and 12 granddaughters. The text, emails, phone calls I've received from them have been filled with fear for themselves, their Hispanic and African-American friends, for their Muslim and Jewish friends, for their LGBT friends, for their Asian friends. I felt their tears and I felt their fear. Third paragraph. We as a nation must find a way to move forward without consigning those who Trump has threatened to the shadows. Their fear is entirely rational, because Donald Trump has talked openly about doing terrible things to them. He goes on, but let me skip to the final fourth paragraph. If this is going to be a time of healing, remember now, he's putting this out after Barack Obama has sat down and acted very jovial with Donald Trump. And Clinton has given her speech, and the pundits have all talked about this. If this is going to be a time of healing, we must first put the responsibility for healing where it belongs, at the feet of Donald Trump, a sexual predator who lost the popular vote and fueled his campaign with bigotry and hate. Winning the Electoral College does not absolve Trump of his grave sins he committed against millions of Americans. Donald Trump may not possess the capacity to assuage those fears, but he owes it to this nation to try. That's what you do, folks, when you're Harry Reid. I mean, that's the classic Harry Reid paragraph. It is basically sticking the knife in, spinning it around, and then pointing to it and saying, see that lovely handle on that knife? I think embedded in that last paragraph are his, are some talking points that I think are helpful. Reminding people, he did not win the majority of American votes. Reminding people that even though he's the president-elect right now, he's still a sexual predator, an admitted sexual predator. reminding people that even though he will be the president, that it is built on bigotry and hate. And remind people that every single day. You know, and I think, you know, this is a guy who has respect for the institutions of America. He's been a senator. But he also understands that, like, you know, these institutions are set up to maintain a certain baseline in this country. And when that baseline gets blown away, you don't just keep holding on to the institutions and the processes. That's putting the cart behind the in front of the horse, and then trying to go sideways, just to extend the metaphor. I mean, there are times where processes and respect for institutions get in the way of what they were set up to do in the first place. That's important to remember. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. It's Friday, folks. I don't know that we have ever played this theme song with this level of, well, no, we haven't. Just shrouded in this level of anger slash despair slash anger. Here it is.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Cliff,
yes.
What a bit of a nightmare.
They're still allowing us to talk to each other, right?
Yeah, for the time being, like, anyways.
The ability to assemble and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically?
Yeah, that raises a good question. I wonder if people... We're getting a little crispiness on that line. Is that... There we go. I wonder if people are so as confident as they were about the problems with the NSA spy. But let's leave that for another day.
Oh, with the NSA.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, it's like everybody else. It all depends who's running it.
There's
been some good tweets and things out there. I'll need to talk to some of you technology pros. You know, I know there are ways to further enhance your security, and I think I'll probably head in that direction.
I think there's some value in people getting a little bit more versed with things like Tor and encrypting their messages and whatnot.
See, I don't, do you do that stuff?
I don't. And it has occurred to me that maybe I should learn a little bit of that in the event. I mean, I wouldn't do it necessarily on a regular basis because I'm frankly not, you know, most of the stuff I say, I think that would get me in trouble, happened here. For the rest of the time, I'm pretty quiet.
I think you and I aren't like hiding our opinions or anything. But
it occurred to me to go get a burner phone, you know, that I would purchase with a gift card that I would have purchased with cash. That's the way I would go about doing it. Go buy a couple of Best Buy gift cards in cash. Then take that to Best Buy and buy a burner phone. That's the way I would do it.
I would say the thing is there's a difference between saying to people, you know, don't freak out, and saying don't do smart things. I mean, look, no less than, I'm trying to remember, but major world organizations, rated Donald Trump as a major risk factor.
Yep.
There are reasons for that. That's not people being paranoid. These are people that do this stuff for a living. And we're analyzing what, I mean, clearly by the fact he's behaved, this is not like hysterical, you know, even saying, oh my God, he's wrong on all the issues, which of course basically he is. But this isn't about that. This is about, he's shown the personality of a tyrant. I mean, he's shown the personality that even more so than I think people knew Richard Nixon had. And so I would say that common sense dictates that if you know, maybe your private communications are just sort of sending cat pictures and telling your family you love them. Okay, no big deal. But if your private communications are things that you think in any way would embarrass you, if they were publicly put out there, or any way would hurt you economically, physically, whatever, yeah, I'd say common sense dictates that some of these things, and a Tor was one of them that I saw people sharing on some listservs and some other things. I am not nearly well enough versed in these things right now, but clearly I need to become better. I mean, you know, something like two-step verification for your email is incredibly easy, and you can do that. And that even creates a little bit more of a challenge for people who want to get to it. So, you know, use some common sense is what I would say. You don't need to freak out. Just use common sense.
Yeah, and the other thing that people should know, too, is that there's a certain amount of, like, when the immunizations, the more people who use this stuff, the less it makes people who use this stuff stand out, which is also helpful, I think. In some ways, you're helping those people who might need to use it. I think like there's a couple of levels to this, right? I don't know that we get to that point, frankly, unless, some terrorist organization decides that Donald Trump represents exactly the type of president who you could goad into doing horrible things to this country.
Where would they ever get that idea from?
Well, I mean. And I would also say, let me just add one more thing too. That dynamic about using encrypted things just because you're creating more noise and makes it harder for people, the noise to signal ratio in the event that we get to a situation like that, is also true about speaking out in public, about going to protests, about even doing stuff like, you know, I mean, this is not, this, I wasn't anticipating talking about this stuff, but, you know, people want to know what they can do to help out. And I mentioned, you know, contribute to groups like Planned Parenthood or to, frankly, Muslim organizations or LGBT organizations that provide support for those folks. But, you know, even doing stuff like if you get a mosque in your town or neighborhood, you know, just calling them up and saying, like, if you need bodies, for daily prayers or something like that, just because, giving a word of encouragement, because there are a lot of people who are scared.
That stuff, it goes viral people, like emotional, you know. You do something, I mean, you know, the whole pay it forward thing. You do something nice, though. People do actually often react by doing, you know, nice things for other people. Just think about the people around you. And there are a lot of people going through a lot of tough times right now with what just happened. So keep in mind. I mean, look, the last thing I'll say on this, because we've got a lot to talk about, is when it comes to all the, you know, the encryption and all that kind of stuff, is that if there are things that are easily accessible, if you're a person who's out there who's going to speak out on things, whatever, it's just a smart thing to do. You know what I mean? I mean, there are people that will bug things for strategic reasons and try to find out what you're doing. You already know that. But I would say the thing that is a little more unique about, maybe not unique among strongmen, let's call it unique among American presidents about Trump, is he's the type of guy that feels a need to go after Alicia Machado. You know what I mean? Or go after, I mean, he's proven and said to people that revenge is an animating feature. And so it's worth keeping in mind that even if it's something that has nothing to do strategically with helping him, but will just embarrass you, this is the kind of thing he might try to expose. If, you know, you could see him up at 2 a.m. obsessing over these things. Just saying.
Yeah.
Using smarts.
Indeed. I mean, it certainly occurred to me that there will be times in the future, I hope, where he'll be, you know, watching MSNBC on 24-hour loop or CNN or whatever it is, and I'll get in a good lick. And
I'm sure he'll be
slightly different
to the majority report.
Well, let's hope. We can only hope that he becomes a member. Now,
yeah.
All right, so let's go on to sort of like, you know, there – I don't even think, frankly, at this point that we have enough data. There are a lot of reasons why I think the Clinton lost. And I think there are a lot of them that are, you know, could very well be the answer and may not. I mean, I think it's, I have a feeling it was, you know, when you're talking about not a huge margin of victory, at least in terms of sheer votes. I mean, obviously, nationally, she's going to get. I mean, she could end up winning.
She's going to win substantially. Now.
She could end up getting a margin significantly higher than Al Gore's in terms of the.
Well,
the
he popular. Won by 500,000 votes. We're already, I think, I've been watching every part of it, but we've already. I think we're already approaching that. And
by the time California comes in, she could be 2 million votes ahead of him. The issue really
is
there's
still apparently a lot of outstanding votes in Washington State.
Right.
You know, I mean, and Colorado still has some outstanding. There's some places. Yeah, I could see this. I could see over. I could see it being.
The issue comes down to, you know, several hundred thousands of votes, you know, many in Pennsylvania, obviously in Wisconsin. And perhaps North Carolina. It depends on how you want to sort of divvy this up. But and some of those are going to be voter suppression. Some of them are going to be because rural whites voted a little bit more than they have in the past.
Right.
Maybe more so in like a place like Pennsylvania than other places. Some of it comes down to Clinton not getting you know, the vote out that she should have gotten out. Some of it comes down to, in my mind, the message that she delivered. Some of it just starts off with a baseline of she was a flawed candidate. Some of it is, you know, Comey. I think, like, literally any one of those things could be a but for.
That's a smart way of looking at it, because I think our tendency too often is to, you know, try to find who's to blame or what's to blame and say that there's one factor there. There's a lot of things to blame here. I mean,
yes.
Hell, you know, the tying in, you know, our original sin is to blame. I mean, part of the way this country was founded was based upon white supremacy, and part of that was based upon making sure that rural farmers would always have an outsized say in what was going on. And, you know, it's gotten more and more obscene. I think what I've read that from what I've read, if I remember my stats correctly, at the time of our country's founding, the largest state was 13 times bigger than the smallest state. At this point, Wyoming has about 500,000 people, and California has about 39 million, and they both have two senators.
Right, but that's that existed.
At the same time, the Electoral College, you know, and the point is the Electoral College reflects all of that. So,
right,
I mean,
but that existed before this cycle started. right? I'm just talking about.
Well, it did, but
yeah,
but
I mean,
But now, think about the two times that people have lost in the last 16 years because of this, and how different a country would be if both. I mean,
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt
that hurts. That hurts us. And
that's not something. That's not something that you know that shouldn't have come into play.
No,
let's put it that
specific
way.
To this election.
Right.
That's
I mean,
an impediment every election.
People should not appreciate. People should have been repulsed by Donald Trump's racism and xenophobia, nationalism, and just his personal attributes and his lack
that's
of.
Right.
But they weren't going to be all that
so
to me.
That. I mean, let's talk about the things that we know.
Well,
right? You're right. We need more data on a lot of things. One thing we know is the Clinton data operation was not everything it was cracked up to be. And I believed it because I thought it was a continuation of Obama's, and it seemed very, and they were so good, it seemed very consistent. It seemed that they polling. And I talked to people privately. I know there, it seemed to make a lot of sense what they were saying. Let's be honest, we hadn't had trouble winning in places like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. You know, Republicans have talked about winning those states in presidential elections for a long time. They hadn't done it since, 1988. There was reason to believe all of that. But clearly, you don't need data to tell you this. You just need to say, well, Hillary Clinton lost, what is it in the end, Wisconsin by 27,000 votes. She didn't visit there once post-convention. And again, I'm just trying to analyze all this, right? Because I can't say when people throw people in the bus and say, oh, my God, you're a moron and blah, blah, blah. I'm not talking about specific people, but these are just facts. She didn't go there once after, and didn't advertise there until there was a week left in the election when apparently they first started sensing there could be serious problems in places like Michigan and Wisconsin.
Right.
A serious mistake was made there. I don't know what it is. I don't know why their data wasn't telling them what it should have been telling them, but it wasn't.
Yeah, look, she lost in Pennsylvania by 30,000 votes, is it? No, I'm sorry, maybe closer to like 80,000 votes.
Many points is that? I'm trying to, I can't, I don't have that in front
percentage
of me.
Percentage points? I think it's probably like
1%.
It was less than 100,000 votes, and I think she, I don't know how much she... underperformed in the Philadelphia area, but part of it also, frankly, and I think like clearly, like look, she was a flawed candidate from the beginning, and then I think she ran a flawed campaign. Beyond that, some of it was a function of her being a flawed candidate, insofar as like. She's just, there was a very bad narrative that was already pre-existing when she was there. The Comey stuff, I think undoubtedly hurt her. You can see it in, all apologies to Nate Silver. He was right. You can see it in his data. But also, they made big mistakes, all of which I think could have made a difference. I'm quite convinced.
Also combat that narrative, and part of that may just be her comfort with certain types of emotional appeals as a candidate, or her being surrounded by certain types of people that made it so that she wouldn't attack with certain.
It seems
parts
to
of
me,
the economy.
Yeah, exactly. This is the part. This is the part where we can start blaming some of the ideological stuff here. All right, now. I know you and I have disagreed on whether or not Bernie Sanders would have been a better candidate against Trump, but it doesn't really matter because
I'm not even real. I don't know that I fully disagree with you. I'm not. I always said, look, I'm not sure if he would have been a better candidate.
But nobody can know.
There'd be a different set of concerns if he had been the nominee.
Yes.
To me.
But
yes.
But that aside, because frankly, I'm not one who believes that. You could take away everything that everybody thinks the DNC did to, supposedly rig the election for Hillary Clinton. And I believe that would not have made a difference in the outcome of the primary. The only thing that would have made a difference in the outcome of the primary, in my opinion, is if Bernie Sanders had started, 9 months earlier, 12 months earlier, with a belief that he could win the election and staffed up and did the things that one needs to do to win a presidential primary against a well-entrenched candidate.
The most entrenched ever. I don't think there's ever been as much of a consensus nominee as there was here. And so right away, anybody was going up against
that.
Yeah,
she was that way in 2008, frankly, I think at one point. It's just that Barack Obama...
But they ignored the caucuses in 2008.
Barack Obama... Well, Barack Obama got in earlier, and frankly, and...
And he also had, you know, he also had a share of the population, African-American voters, who he could speak to in a way. There was no sort of natural group that Bernie could go to.
I think that given a year before, you know, having talked to people in at the DNC, you know, state party chairs and whatnot, who were open to a Bernie candidate, or talking to unions who were open to a Bernie candidate, he just got there second. And nobody thought that he was coming, and he didn't even think that he was going to be serious about it. I mean, that's just the reality, and it sucks. But putting that aside, putting all that aside, because we...
The only similarity, I would say, in the end, between him and Donald Trump is I think they both ran thinking they had no chance, and they were just making statements, very different statements for very different reasons. But, and the only, you know, Donald Trump snuck through, whereas Bernie didn't. But yeah, the point is nobody, it would be hard to see... what was going to happen ahead of time. We're not in a major depression, and we're not. There aren't the kinds of structural things going on.
But so let's take the campaign, like, without relitigating the primary, because it doesn't matter. Because we, you know, more Democrats voted for Clinton than for Sanders, and we can can regret that, and we can regret that Elizabeth Warren didn't jump in the race, but. You know, it wasn't for lack of people wanting her to do so, but
a lot of people were calling for him.
And I'm convinced, you know, if Joe Biden had jumped into the race, Bernie Sanders also could have had won. Frankly, I mean, I think that would have made a difference in the primary. But from the convention
you get mostly that one-on-one, which really happened. O'Malley didn't grab enough votes from anybody. Didn't have the sort of. You know, it's different than what occurred in the Republican primary, where Kasich was able to stay in long enough to weaken Ted Cruz enough. Not that I think Ted Cruz would have been any better than Trump, so I don't care. But he would have had a better shot at winning in the end had Kasich gotten out.
Right.
Whereas there was no dynamic like that on the Democratic side.
So starting from the convention on, I believe that the Clinton campaign. And I'm not making this up. I mean, you know, it's been read that there's all sorts of supporting evidence for this. They made a couple of decisions. One, not to go after Paul Ryan and the Republican Party. Two, to not discuss policy. Some of the surrogates did. But she did not put that out in front. She, you know, she didn't do it in the debates. She didn't when it came up, she talked about it. But there was no attempt to talk about economic policy. There was no attempt to tie him to Republican, longstanding Republican policies, all the ones that we could predict they would be pushing and the ones they're going to be pushing now. They made a conscious effort not to do that. That was both, I think, just bad politics and I think a way to further an agenda that was certainly less than populist. They wanted, a partner in Paul Ryan to make some corporate tax deals and whatnot, and ones that may or may not have been, sound from a policy standpoint or appreciated. But that decision, that level of incompetence to me suggests that, like, there should be a wholesale cleaning of the Democratic leadership. They just messed up too badly.
I think you'd look almost at any organization after something like this happens. And, of course, that would be your result, right? Would be to clear everybody out. I mean, they missed it. I mean, you know, on a strategic level, on a tactical level, it's not even the point that 27,000 votes could have gone one way and this many votes could have gone another way and that she came really close. It shouldn't have been close, you know? And that doesn't mean the media doesn't have didn't have a major role to play here, and wasn't disgraceful, because they were disgraceful. But you know and there are other things, obviously, what Comey did and ISIS. I mean, and Putin, and you know, a lot of these kinds of things. But in the end, you still have to run a better, you still have to run a better race than that. You still have to talk to people about issues that are important to them. I mean, the key factor in the end here that you have to look at is there is something like 12% or whatever it was of people that voted for Obama twice and then voted for Trump. That Southern whites, you weren't going to, you know, and when I talk about Southern whites, I mean, not people that moved there for jobs after college to places like Atlanta and whatever, but people that, you know, working class whites in the South went away from the Democratic Party a long time ago based strictly on race and then some, you know, religious issues and things like that. But the great sort of, you know, walking away from the Democratic Party was among Northern whites this time. And if you look at a map of what changed, I mean, in some of these rural counties in the north, parts of Ohio, where I live here, I mean, she did much better in Hamilton County, where I am here, in an urban county. It's just that that couldn't make up for the losses in places like Iowa, Minnesota, where she barely won, Wisconsin, obviously, Michigan, Pennsylvania. It happened in upstate New York, too. It happened in the second district of Maine. You know, this was a new and major loss for the Democratic Party, and they need to figure out what the hell happened and why, and I've got some pretty good ideas what that is. But that's what changed things.
So let's start with just, like, you know, what is in the news in terms of what's happening now. The big fight is going to be, I mean, right now, right, like, all you have is the fight about personnel in the Democratic Party. There's going to be a big fight for DNC chair. And literally over the past 18 hours, I think at the very least, it's hard to imagine that it could go anywhere but to Keith Ellison, at least as one of the co-chairs. Last night you had Elizabeth Warren give, Bernie Sanders has already specifically endorsed Keith Ellison. Elizabeth Warren gave what I would call like a 7/8 endorsement, but it was enough to force Chuck Schumer this morning to endorse Keith Ellison.
I wasn't even aware of that.
Oh, yeah. No, he...
If Schumer's doing it, that's a pretty good statement. If he's willing to do it, that he's a guy that tends to see the writing on the wall.
According to sources close to Schumer, I think this is from Politico, he spoke with Ellison yesterday. He said he is going to support Keith Ellison. Now, with that said, Howard Dean announced yesterday too, and I don't think Schumer and Dean get along particularly well. But I think, like, at the end of the day, I think, frankly, Howard Dean, anything that he did, and I think he did some positive things when he was chair of the DNC.
When he was there. Until I heard about Ellison, when I first heard about Howard Dean announcing and I hadn't heard Ellison, I was actually in favor, if depending upon who he's against. I know he's been a lobbyist more recently. I know there are lots of complaints about him. But in terms of the 50-state strategy and all of that, I thought what he did, frankly, he's one of the reasons we took back Congress in the mid-2000s.
Yeah, but the beauty of the 50-state strategy is that, like, implementing it is not particularly tricky, right? There's plenty of that institutional memory. It's just really a decision of saying, like, are we going to pursue it? And
right.
I think, you know, Ellison seems to be perfectly, willing to pursue that and well situated to do it. And the thing that's good about Ellison, it seems to me, is he's in an extremely blue district. Like, he is not going to have to. His politics are never going to bump up against his own political future, or I should say.
Which has been a problem at times among the leadership, elected members of the leadership in the House and the Senate, you know, when that's occurred. I mean, not as much in the House because it's been sort of Nancy Pelosi and whatever. They've had other problems, which we can get into, recruiting good candidates, for example. Harry Reid became a lot more progressive during his time. And luckily, on some level, Nevada moved in a similar direction because he started off as an NRA stalwart and anti-choice. And you know, I think he may remain anti-choice, but he's never really voted as if that's an issue. And, you know what I mean? And Tom Daschle, that was always an issue in South Dakota. So I think my only concern, and I'll just state it now, when it comes to Keith Ellison, is that being an elected official means it's not a full-time job. And so I would say I would be very supportive of him and his view of things. And I think that's the kind of face and background we need to put forward right now. But I would be more, I'd be more sort of supportive of it if I know he's understanding that he's in office and he needs help. and is willing to sort of say, hey, you know, I need to bring in somebody at least to make sure that things are moving forward, because he's got to worry about other things too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would think so. But I think that can be overstated on some level, particularly since, like, you know, they're in the deep, deep minority in the House. And frankly, to have a Keith Ellison have access to an apparatus, I think outweighs any concerns I would have in terms of the work that they would do. I mean, I would imagine he's smart enough to do that, to run both those operations, or have
intelligence. It's time. I mean, I want to, you know, just to make sure that he properly devotes the time that's necessary to it. I'm not worried about his smarts one bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think. I mean, my perspective on this is something more like this is dispositional. I mean, it's not like, you know, he's going out there. I don't know if he's got the massive fundraising powers of somebody who's going to go in glad hand. But we don't want someone to be doing that. We want someone who's going to basically be raising this money from smaller donations and make this more of a grassroots organization. And that means that, you know, he's going to have a team that's going to be doing that. I mean, I think, like,
and the bigger donations are going to come in anyhow, whether you want, you know. So I'm kind of tired of, we've gone for that, right? Oh, the guy that can self-fund and or has access to funders. How'd that work out for Patrick Murphy in Florida?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's been sadly, that's been the sort of Senate route for Chuck Schumer. And it didn't work. And it really hasn't worked a lot. We were lucky in that a number of elections, the Republicans put up people that were considered so crazy by their electorates that we still won anyhow. But, you know what I mean? Money can be raised. Money will be raised. Whether you want money coming in from big donors or not, it will, especially with Trump as president. That's not what we need the person at the DNC necessarily doing. I think he could help bring in those smaller donations Bernie did, as you said, and could be very good in that capacity.
All right, I want to move on from this for a moment, but I want to point something out about this, okay? So here's this piece from, this is from Politico, I think, okay? This is the one that talks about, yep, Schumer supporting. I want to bring this up because this, I think, shows like how power works in these instances. Now, Politico comes out with a story this morning. This is now about 12 hours after Elizabeth Warren is asked about it on Rachel Maddow's show and says that she supports Ellison, okay? And
right,
this story from Politico says that Schumer spoke with Ellison on Thursday afternoon and said he supports him for chair. Now, it didn't say that he said that he supported him for chair there. It just says, and, quote, supports him for chair, according to a source close to Schumer.
Right.
I think that what happened is that Schumer may or may not have spoken to him Thursday afternoon, saw that Elizabeth Warren was supporting Ellison, never necessarily a huge fan of Howard Dean's. And this is Chuck Schumer basically trying to make sure they don't come for him.
That's probably very much right. You know, he's the odd man. He's sort of an odd man out. And where, I mean, that's one thing that this loss by Hillary Clinton does even more, is the power in the party is shifting even more to people,
yep,
like Bernie and Warren and Ellison and others. Sadly, I would have thrown Feingold in there, but sadly we couldn't pull that one off. And so, yeah, you're right. I mean, he's got to start getting concerned at some point, because some of these guys are going to start being
concerned. He's already concerned,
job,
I think.
I think deeply concerned. So I think this is smart. Yeah, for him, this is a smart move to sort of let some of that pressure out, because he's been way too friendly to a lot of the Wall Street,
yeah,
and neoconish interests that are going to not make people happy.
I mean, I think this is shrewd on his part. I think that he should really be the next person that people go after, though. And let me make also one other thing clear so people understand this. I do think that this loss has empowered Warren and Sanders. But it is the difference between having the power at the kids' table versus a little bit less power in relationship to Chuck Schumer at the adult table. I mean, you
right,
know, this is basically like, yes, Elizabeth Warren may have a little more access to the milk at the kids' table. But what we wanted her was to have access to the wine. And that's not, that's off the table. So people should not misunderstand this. She is more powerful relative to Chuck Schumer, or can intimidate Chuck Schumer in this loss. But she could have done more in terms of like what the actual agenda is,
right,
in winning.
Well, what are your thoughts? Would you say that he should be the next one people should go after? What do you what are your thoughts on how that should occur?
I think that the next thing to take over here, it seems to me, is once you've taken over the RNC, is to take over the Congressional and Senate campaign committees. Because
that's what I was going to say. That to me is as important as the sort of leadership positions on the floor.
For all of Chuck Schumer's connections on Wall Street to get money, it doesn't mean anything if you pick crappy candidates who are not going to win. It doesn't matter.
That's exactly right. And I mean, they didn't just do anything. They got blown out.
They got blown out. They got destroyed. And
he undermined, you know, a number of people. Sestak comes to mind in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Could he have won? I don't know. He came pretty damn close to winning in 2010 in an even worse environment than this one. And he undermined him and actually spent a couple $1 million in money that they could have used in different places against Sestak in the primary.
Yep.
That would be an example.
Yep.
Yep.
And all this seems to be next. You know, you take, because the importance of these committees in the Senate, in the House, is that when new members come in, they remember who was the chair, who basically,
right,
almost definitionally must have helped them get there. And that is going to be important in terms of the future of these parties. And then I think, you know, they also begin to dictate the way that Democrats face Donald Trump. Like, you know, what is going to be their disposition? I mean, we're going to talk more about this in the future, but we just got a couple minutes. But
I liked Harry Reid's statement today, though.
Yes, that was fantastic. I read that at the beginning of the show. What do you think they should be doing? Should they be obstructing him at every turn? I mean, it seems like what Warren and Sanders have agreed upon, or at least have settled on, is like, we're going to look at his campaign, take the things that we like and want him to do that we think will create a cleave between him and the Republicans in the House and the Senate, and pretend that he was serious about those things. Say we want to help him achieve those things, but on everything else, we're going to obstruct.
That's exactly what I would do. I would, because look, if he really, in the end, if you can accomplish both getting an infrastructure bill passed that we sorely need, I mean, that does have to do with people's lives, right? You know, and does have to do with jobs and some things. If you can do that while also causing him, you know, Paul Ryan to say mean things about Trump and him to send out those tweets in the middle of the night about how unfair it is, then it's a twofer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, in the end, he's dispositionally, you know, he'll over 4 years, people will see a lot more of him than they even saw over a year and a half or 2 years of the kind of person he is. And so with the right candidate, I have no doubt he will be as beatable next time as he was this time. It doesn't mean you have to block every single thing he does. But, you know, I would fight on everything. And the first major fight I saw, Senator Merkley talking about this, the Supreme Court seat. I mean, and the language he used on Chris Hayes' show, and he was exactly right. I mean, what they've done here is they've stolen a Supreme Court seat.
Absolutely.
That should have been ours.
Absolutely.
There's no other way to put it. It's as blatant as how they stole the election in 2000.
More so.
Yeah, well, probably, yes, that's probably correct. I was thinking the presidency is a bigger deal. You're right. When it comes to how they stole it, yes, it more blatantly stole it. And so what I would, first of all, I like the guy that wrote that piece for the Washington Post. I like to respect democratic norms, but when the other side has rejected them, as these guys have, if I were Obama, I'd propose somebody and try to put him on the court right now.
Yeah,
I know some people might argue with me about that, but they've already broken the system. Let's have that fight over them not putting somebody on for a year.
Absolutely.
I would do that. That's always been the problem, as much as I've liked a lot of what Obama's done, is he won't do things like that, even when the other side does stuff like that to him.
Nope.
He should have done that 6 months ago.
Frankly. Well, I'll tell you why he won't do it, is because he doesn't want whatever the crisis that would create to be on his, part of his legacy. For him, it's just easier to do that. Now, I think it's a mistake because there's not going to be much of his legacy after this. You know, I mean, I think like at one point he was willing to be the first African-American president, and he knows that is the one that is going to resonate in history. I think he wanted to get some stuff done after that and realize like that I can get away with doing that without harming that legacy. And the question is, what is the calculation here? I mean, he really should do a recess appointment and then just basically let everybody else sort it out.
That's what I would do. Yes.
I don't think that's going to happen.
You know, I think there's maybe a 0.25% chance, and that might be overstating the chance. So that's not going to happen. That's what I would do. But otherwise, so that's going to be, so to get back to the original conversation, it's going to be left up to these guys in the Senate. I would absolutely, on this seat, unless they are willing to come in with Merrick Garland or some other kind of consensus candidate that reflects a hell of a lot of what we stand for, I would block anybody. They'll get rid of the filibuster, as they will, and show who they are, which wouldn't shock anybody, because that's why, to me, the filibuster has always been stupid for us to keep and say, oh, well, we need it for when they're, as if they wouldn't get rid of it in a damn second.
Right.
So I'd filibuster it, and I'd make that argument. So that would be the first big thing. But, yes, his infrastructure bill, sure. It sounds like they're already dumping TPP. Hell, we don't even have to do anything on that one.
Right.
If there are one or two other things, I'm trying to remember what they are, where we might agree with him, sure. Everything else, highlight every bad statement he makes, every dumb move he makes, view him what he is, an illegitimate president.
Yeah, I think –
quite literally.
I think I think people should understand that obstruction, total obstruction for the Democrats does not work in the same way that it would for Republicans. They have a different base. They're appealing to a different group of people. And frankly, the Donald Trump relationship with the Republican House and Senate is not the same as Barack Obama's with the Democratic, when he had a Democratic House and Senate. It's just not the same.
It isn't. There's a lot of room here to exacerbate the tensions, and beyond just the sort of policy tensions, whatever those are, and I think they'll be few because I don't think Trump really cares about anything, but the tensions in terms of personalities between them. I'd almost like, maybe in a way, try to puff up for a little while Paul Ryan just to get Trump angry and lose his mind.
Actually a good idea.
I mean, stuff like that.
He is a smart guy. I mean, I don't think anybody can deny it, and significantly more telegenic than Trump. I mean, it's just reality.
Paul Ryan should start tweeting about how many letters he's getting from models about how great he is.
Right, he's getting letters from models. We should maybe set up stuff to, you know, a website, somebody should have to talk about how cool Paul Ryan is. He's in such great shape. The Republicans should all follow him, follow what he's doing, and, you know, Trump will lose his mind.
Just look at that hair Paul Ryan's got.
We're protecting Medicare. That's it.
Kelly?
His beautiful blue eyes.
There you go. Boom.
Dreamy, especially when he puts his hat on backwards. Oh, man.
Oh, my God. It's so deep, dark.
So that's what
dark,
I'd be looking for those.
Deep, dark.
I'd be looking for those opportunities.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Kelly.
I was just going to say there were deep,
Kelly's
dark,
getting a little carried
demonic
away.
Pools.
Oh.
Of blue eyes.
I can't. I can't say
I don't know what's
straight.
Going on with Kelly right now. But,
he's a pretty sexy guy. You can't blame him.
All right. So we'll talk more about this, obviously, in the coming weeks and months and
years and what seems like a long time, folks. Strap in, folks. Going to be an interesting one.
Very important to fight and remind people this guy did not win. I mean, I think your point is well taken about these norms, right? There's no reason to not undercut the legitimacy of Donald Trump as president. I'm sorry. I mean,
No, and he'll help you along the way if you do it.
Exactly.
So join him in undercutting his legitimacy.
Cliffy, talk to you next week.
All right.
Yeah. Next week. Right. Okay. We'll talk to you then.
Good.
Bye.
All right. Take care. Bye.
I've lost track of is next week Christmas? Where are we in the calendar?
I've forgot my dog's birthday.
You did?
Yeah. When I said it was now her birthday yesterday, I just changed her birthday.
You changed her birthday?
Well, she's a dog. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I think, I mean, did...
Now
did,
her birthday's November 10th.
Did she complain?
Nope.
All right. Well, then I wouldn't
worry
about it.
She's got a nice pink bunny, and she loves it.
All right. Let's listen. Let's take a break. Should we play the Jimmy Reefer Cake song now?
Yeah, it's called Potheads Are Cool.
Potheads Are Cool. Hold on. I'm going to want to hear this one, I think. So let me okay. Yeah, do a different song. And when I say, then we'll switch it over once I get Matthew Film Guy on the line. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back, Matthew Film Guy.
Potheads would pay for all the roads. We potheads would pay for all the schools. We won't whine about the tax. We just sit back and relax. Because potheads are cool. I said because potheads are cool. All taxpayers are paying for the jails. We'd like to change these marijuana rules. We won't whine about the tax. Now we'll sit back and relax. Because potheads are. Because potheads are cool.
There it is. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Jimmy Reefer Cake. Maybe that's... I don't know. I don't know what is the... It just seems to be like, I think we're all still a little bit, finding our footing. And I think Jimmy just landed where he's in his comfort zone. And I think I feel like that was a little bit of like, macaroni and cheese.
You battle with trolls.
That's right. Exactly.
There you
that
go.
Is that is Jimmy's equivalent of me going into my timeline and saying like, okay, who do I got here? Oh, this guy seems like a moron. How are you? Let's engage for 45 minutes. That's basically, I'm doing that in the email,
that's
box.
Exactly.
I'm doing that. In the, like, that's
no, every time it's amazing with you, I'll say like, hey, you know what? So-and-so sent a really smart email. You should check it out. You're like, oh yeah, that's great. Did you see this fucking idiot? I'm just going to spend the next hour going back
exactly,
and forth with him.
Exactly. That's all it is. It's. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, on Fridays, even in the post 11/8 era, we continue the tradition of having our movie recommender of the week on, and one of our most longstanding, if not, I think currently our most longstanding movie recommender who came in after the old Chris Rosen debacle, which we don't have time to get into right now, is Matthew Film Guy. And he's so been such a with us for so long that years and years and years ago, pre-11/8, someone wrote this song.
Such themes.
Mm-hmm. That guy fell down a big hole as he was saying that. Matthew Film Guy, how are you?
Hi, Cox.
We cucked the vote and it didn't work.
Man, what the cuck happened?
Are you? Did someone put you in like some type of like a steamer trunk? And what are you doing?
This steamer trunk is really getting me cramped.
What are you already in a bunker? Where are you calling from?
No, I'm actually speaking to you from the heart of global capitalism. I'm doing some funny corporate videos for the Boston Consulting Group on Park Avenue in the heart of Manhattan. So it's a little bit odd being here at this time, but it's given me the ability to just put my head down and go back to work and just do what I do and move forward. So in a way, it's been actually a blessing in disguise. Plus, I get paid.
I wish you hadn't told us the place you're working at so that you could actually give us a sense of like how people are reacting around the office.
I don't think I've signed anything that will allow me, that would force me not to let you know that it's been a mixed bag. I mean, the people themselves are, you know, I think as shocked as most New Yorkers are. But the few little whispers I've heard, you know, from some of the businesses and the things is that if taxes get cut in a Republican administration, that could tend to lead to more revenue for the kind of companies they deal with. But they have such a diverse sort of portfolio of businesses they deal with that it's hard for me to get a sense of like what if this was really good for anybody. Right now, it's the chaos thing. Like I saw a lot of people working on projects that were like, the market's going up, the market's going down. Everybody be careful. Everybody just calm down. It's going to be okay. That kind of thing. But, you know, in times like this, what I do is I tend to go inward, try to remember the sort of essential truths of life, try to get a little bit below the sort of surface waves of the political storm, maybe sometimes go macro even, just think of kind of the wider forces at work. You know, sometimes in normal life that kind of can make you feel small, but when you get buffeted around by a bizarre and disappointing political outcome like this, I think it helps to kind of just, you know, try to protect that small, quiet space that you can make for yourself, that inward space that you just have to sustain in a world of chaos and distortion. You know what I'm saying, Sam?
Movies are good. Capitalism is bad. I'm Matthew Weiss, and I'm in my little Buffett space.
Yeah, you know, there's times to go outward.
I feel like you need to get another go-to voice.
That's the Jew voice.
Well,
sorry.
I was going to say, like,
sorry.
You know, I sound like him.
Yes.
Michael Bloomberg sounds like him.
No, Michael Bloomberg is much more high-pitched. Excuse me.
It's like a Chuck Schumer.
Chuck Schumer does literally sound like that. I mean, Jesus.
I mean, we're Jews, Sam. Let's not fight it. You know, come on.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, don't
all
resist right. The obvious, man.
I mean, it also the people who are at his learning annex sound like that. I mean, they're all...
Well, they actually sound like that at the Jewish Center in Farsley.
Oh, yeah, of course.
If anybody, they literally sound like that, which is nice. I find that accent very comforting and soothing. So, Michael,
it's
please
my
talk like that all the time.
Here's my point. For the white nationalists who watch this show... the white nationalists are now watching this show because of their Trump triumphalism. They're getting the idea that everybody's Jewish because of Michael's impersonations. Like everybody's Jewish.
Hi, this is Barack Obama. Donald Trump's not my president. Pass the gefilte fish.
Sam, not everybody is Jewish, but hey.
I finally have an
perfect
Elizabeth Warren impression. You ready for it?
Hello.
We need to protect students from predatory loans. Also, my back hurts.
I went to the Capitol Hill and I can't see so good.
My name is Keith Ellison.
Hello, assalamu alaikum. I'm Keith Ellison, the first Muslim, quote-unquote, elected to Congress. My feet hurt. I've been walking all day.
I'm Chuck Schumer, and I can't see so good. Actually, he does talk that way.
And, exactly. And now Donald Trump's president, God damn it, and I got to pretend that I care about friggin' minorities and Puerto Ricans and all sorts of things because Hillary isn't there.
I think we later in the program, we're going to unveil Michael's latest creation. Yeah, so it's very exciting. We're starting in our post-11-8 world.
I think this is on the theme of what I'm trying to say, because just like, you know, Jimmy Reefercake went back to his well, Michael goes back to his voices. I think that's a healthy and natural extent of his coping mechanisms. Mm-hmm. I, for one, encourage it.
Well, there you go.
That's where that stuff comes from.
Now, Matthew, has your film selection for this week, is it going to reflect that? I mean, is it, you know,
well,
because,
you know,
here's the tension here for a moment. Okay. Let me just say this,
that,
on one hand, you're saying, like, you know, it is, in times like these, it's okay to retreat to things that are a little bit more, a little bit less granular, a little bit less, day to day and practical. The broader themes in, and on some level, it's like we retreat to places that allow us just a little bit of escapism. However, I also know that from a film perspective, you don't like escapism. You find those films to be a little bit less than. So there's a tension here in terms of your your pick, isn't there?
Why, yes, Sam, there's a little bit of tension. I don't know what films to tell you because my mind is going crazy.
It's like every guest now sounds like Andy Kindler.
It's been a Kindlerized world.
Oh, my God.
Is this thing on? actually, Sam, let me just.
Oh, we got to take a quick break for our Brotherhood simulcast. We're going to Brotherhood across the country in 147 temples in the nation.
I didn't gavel you in, Sam. I didn't gavel you in.
Okay. All right, let's talk normal. Just so that we'll clip this
is,
one
is
for
it
our
normal?
White nationalist friends. Okay, and
okay. Okay. But, you know, Sam, I know you like to set me up as this sort of a caricature of a you know, esthete and this kind of film snob, but that's not really who I am. I know there's a place in the world for what you call escapism, but I'm not even necessarily advocating escapism right now. I'm more like going deep to the roots, sort of a more spiritual retreat. So it's not just an escape from the flux of reality. It's kind of a digging into a deeper reality, just shifting perspective. You could call it wider, you could call it deeper, you could call it a higher perspective. Those are the things that I think basically help me in times like this. But also, if you just want to turn off your mind and just, you know, kick back and enjoy some visceral pleasures, I don't object to that either. I think there is a time, especially after a trauma, to kind of give yourself that. And I actually have a pick that will work on that level, that escapist level, for you, Sam, because I know right now I'm here to help you as best I can. I'm doing the thing I can. It's like the airplane mask. I've helped myself as much as I can, and now I'm going to help you. And I know the kind of movies
don't
you like.
Literally put on an airplane mask right now because we can't hear you when you do that.
And I'm going to. So right now, I have to hear you say this. Sorry. Okay. So Sam, I want to give you a movie, but I also, before I give you the escapist movie, I want to say another impulse I have is to go into sort of the macro political thing. So I thought, like, I'm going to go in my room and watch every Adam Curtis documentary this weekend and just, like, really get a sense of the grander forces at work that move politics and that move history so that this one little thing can be put into some perspective, you know, because it shocked a lot of people. Some people it didn't shock as much. So to talk, get some wisdom on that level. But also there's something deeper in, like, I think I may have recommended this movie, Spring, Summer, Fall, and Winter and Spring. A Korean film, that's an extremely deep movie that I think reminds you of kind of the flux of life just in general, just broad scale, and not to hold on to any one outcome any too greatly, if that makes sense. So I think that's a good one to kind of go back to and touch in times like this. And
so in other words, don't embrace a society that isn't completely interwoven with virulent racism, sexism, and nationalism.
Don't embrace that. Is that what you're saying? Don't embrace that.
Don't hang on to that too tightly.
Don't hang on to that too tightly. But you have to come back and engage. You know, you got to go in and you got to go out. You don't, you know, there's a time for everything, as the song says and the Bible says.
It's like
and
the this Zen is maybe Oxfordian a pictures, Matthew.
Yes, that's right. Michael knows in my office I have this series of Oxfording pictures. It's a metaphor for kind of like how you deal with the ineffable, the part of you that maybe is part of something greater, but also your limited mind, and how you get that kind of feeling that you're just a separate entity. And occasionally you have to remind yourself that you're not. But once you touch that kind of oneness of everything, you go back into the marketplace and you do your business. And I'm in no way abdicating your political responsibility. But for right now, I think it's time to kind of go inside. So spring, summer, mm-hmm. fall, winter, and spring is the spiritual film. But Sam, I think you would really get a kick out of the recent action film by clever director Matthew Vaughn called The Kingsman Secret Service.
Mm.
It actually has a kind of, it's like a Bond pastiche with a kind of a dark sense of humor, which was really funny. And it also has a kind of anti-globalist agenda to it in a weird way. So it's actually a very good movie in the sense of just give me something to cheer for and to
could Milo watch that one?
Experience. It's a little too violent, I think. It's just on the side of too many. It's kind of cartoonish violence, but you have like decapitations and limbs being severed. So it may, depending on how well you know your daughter,
yeah.
it may be too much. But it's not
the way she's feeling these days. I think like she's already like going into full on ninja training, it seems like.
Well, then this may be good for her because it's kind of about a working class kid who gets involved in a sort of up till now an elite run secret service agency. And it's kind of about, you know, a globalist trying to enact.
She's more like an elite kid going into a working class right. agency.
So maybe you want Spy Kids. You know, the Rodriguez. I don't know. Watch Maybe that. You've seen that anyway.
I think we watched that.
Okay.
All right. Well, no. Yeah,
you check out Kingsman to just enjoy yourself a little bit. And I always recommend the movies of Adam Curtis. They're all available at, I think it's called thinkme.film. You can Google him.
And most of them are on YouTube, too.
Yeah.
On YouTube also. Although he has a new one that I haven't watched yet that I'm really looking forward to. He has a new, like, three-hour film.
Yeah, Hypernormalization, it's called.
Yeah. Have you seen it yet?
Yeah, I saw it. A couple weekends ago.
At what speed did you watch it on?
I watched it at normal speed because I was watching it with some other people.
I asked him the same question. Before he gave a crate recommendation on Dope Boys, I was like, did you watch this at the speed we will be watching it on?
Did you...
Matt, I would recommend seeing some normal speed movies for right now just to center yourself. Don't consume. Just
centering himself right is watching it at like 1.7.
Yeah, like my, Sam's arguing with trolls. My thing is binging information at high speeds.
I get that. I totally get that. Well,
what program do you use to watch your shows on YouTube at high speed?
There's a Chrome plugin, HTML5 video speed up player, I think it's called. But if you search like video HTML5 Chrome extensions, you'll find it.
Why do you keep turning my mic down? Okay. You can speed up just using YouTube. If you just want, I mean,
but
it's
only up to two times. So.
Only up to two times.
I'm so glad you use your powers for good, Matt.
Matthew Film Guy, let me reiterate Adam Curtis documentaries, spring, summer, fall, winter, spring, summer, fall.
That's right.
And
just the one, but yeah.
Kingsman Secret Service.
Yeah.
So there's a whole. Let me just. I don't want to rain on your. I don't think this is the time for people to turn in. I sort of feel like, you know, because I get in some emails like people are like, take the rest of the week off. And I sort of feel like this is the time to actually go outward. You know, and then, you know, the holidays
well,
come
Sam,
up, then
Sam,
be introspective.
Sam, you've been going outward for 2 years. How'd that work out?
What?
You've been going outward for 2 years.
I'm sorry. Did you think that was me going outward? That was me just sort of like being around here.
Just I have absolutely no inner life left. God damn it.
Right.
I don't have any introspection, emotional, spiritual, or psychological life. It's all outwardly directed.
Absolutely.
Always. I only will try to defeat Trump and argue on Twitter. That's it.
I
God
am going
damn
to
it.
Sue you people. I'm going to sue you people into giving me my soul back.
Well, I believe, actually, a sitting president is can be subject of a suit. I think we saw that with the Paula Jones thing. And so, I mean...
Punitive damages from looking at your face.
Exactly.
And the people you represent...
Sorry, I'll be suing the white nationalists and the Klansmen and the inbreds as well.
Sam, let me just say something, Sam. When I want fuel for the fire to go out, so as we're saying... I go to you. You provide that for people, so I would never ask you to go off your brand or do the thing that's not your thing. What you do
my
is
core
very
brand proposition.
Exactly. Michael too. Although Michael's bi-curious, I think, about going out and going in. But I really think that what you do is important. I'm just saying, for me, when I have this moment,
right,
I need to convalesce a little and just not escape. But just get back in touch with what I think is important, what the purpose of life is in general. Why are we here? All that stuff puts the Donald Trump thing into perspective. And I think it helps you attack it better. It doesn't make you leave it or you know, run from it if you're doing it right.
All right.
But not you. Sam, we need you on that wall. Do what you got to do. If you have an aneurysm at 58, that's, you know, you'd have done your best.
Yeah. What are you going to do? Do you think it's going to be an aneurysm?
I don't know what it'll be, but when it happens, I'll have appreciated you up until that moment so much, Sam.
Well, let me put it this way. Matthew, if that happens, you have just gotten yourself written into my will. You will get all the DVD copies of A Bad Situationist I have.
Yes.
In boxes.
Yes.
So I would now start to plan on that storage unit that you're going to have to rent.
Okay, sounds good. I'll set that up. What do you think, another 10 years or so, maybe? 15 tops?
I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
Jesus.
We'll see.
I'm sorry,
I'm going,
Kelly. Don't
now
worry.
I'm
Sam's
going
live
out
to a ripe old age.
With death jokes.
Oh, like 40 or 50 more years, something like
well,
that.
Well, thank you, Kelly. I was actually planning on 54 more years.
Well, let's be real here.
The climate stuff
that's happening,
sure.
None of us are going to make it to 54
that's
more
right.
years.
Yeah.
Look, all I'm saying is the light that burns twice as bright burns half as long. Okay, Sam, this is a good thing.
Oh, that's very sweet. Matthew Film
Guy.
Now
that means I'm going to die.
Matthew Film Guy.
We're all going to die. Let me just end with this.
We're all going to die.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure, but for, of course, the proclamation that I'm going to be dying shortly.
Well,
we will talk to you.
Say your prayers.
Well, I will. Thank you, okay. Matthew Film Guy. Adieu.
Thanks, Sam. Take care, guys.
Bye-bye. That was Matthew Film Guy. I tried to get Saul to record this morning. I'm calling into our phone system because we're doing another freebie Friday
report.
Today.
The host will be with you shortly.
What's that? What, Kelly? What did what?
This music is such a downer, man.
I want to know why we can't have the show on there. I got to talk to our tech department about this. So, I was explaining to Saul, he wanted to know, today is Veterans Day, and people should, just keep that in mind. A lot of people lost our lives, so that we could, have, the rights to do things like protest against, a president-elect. And, hopefully. Hopefully, those rights will still be intact over the coming months and years. Certainly heard from one of Donald Trump's proposed Department of Homeland Security chiefs that sheriff from Milwaukee County, because you know the county sheriffs, they're ready to handle an agency of this sort, but. Now, I guess they were going to put Bernie Carrick there, for God's sakes. But he was at least working in New York, right? I mean, that's a fairly big department. But,
and at least distracted enough from having constant affairs and corruption scandals from maybe causing less harm than that guy.
That's right. I mean, he was just a full-on grifter, as opposed to this David Clark guy who says, you know, it's been a day. We should be quelling these protests.
Hashtag, I miss the grifters.
Exactly. But so Saul was upset that I was going to work. He's like, why do you have to go to work? I said, well, you know, and he was in here a couple of weeks ago, just coincidentally. I'm like, you know, I talk into the microphone to people, and there's a lot of people who are upset, just like you are, because thinks he's upset about Trump. I mean, he is, but that's just because, you know, I've trained him to be.
He doesn't know what he's talking about.
He has no idea what he's talking about, but he did actually go. There was like a toy store that had a an opportunity for kids to vote on Tuesday because there was no school, and he voted for Clinton.
He was a Stein guy.
Well, he was like, "This is BS." But I, so that said, so here is, so I explained to him, like, you know, people need to be cheered up a little bit. I said, what do you, what 10 things can I, can I tell them that they should do or have to feel better? And if I can remember it, here is, I really need a, I'm going to use the, Uber Ales as the drum roll. Here are Saul's top 10 things that you should do. See if I can remember them in order. Play with magnetiles. Go to the playground. Eat ice cream. Eat cookies. Eat gummy bears. Oh, watch Paw Patrol. That's obvious.
Similar to what film guy Matthew was saying.
Pet a dog, pet a cat. What were the other two things that he said that he loved?
It's going to make me tear up. This is too much, man.
There was two other things. I can't remember what they were. I think build with blocks. The magnetiles were sort of like, and there was one other. I can't remember what it was now. So nine things from Saul as to what you can do to feel better. I feel bad now that I don't remember the 10th, but whatever. I mean, most parents would just remember 7.
Give someone a hug or something?
That didn't come up. I mean, he's my son.
Call your granddad?
Nope.
He is your son.
That's right. Nothing that involves like any...
Yeah, family contact and right. Hugs? Nope. Disgusting.
We didn't. Hugs didn't come up.
Well, he likes Myla. Maybe he'll say, give your sister a hug.
Gives her a nice solid handshake, maybe.
I mean, he didn't say that. I mean... you know, gummy bears, though, he came up with immediately. Let's go to the phones. You call him from a 323 area code. Who's this? Oh, wait, hold on 1 second. 323 area code. Who's this? 323? Oh, I got off. That was weird. Maybe they lost their connection. You call from a 202 area code. Who's this?
Hi, this is Charles.
Hi, Charles. What's on your mind?
I'm actually calling from Utah. I have a 202 area code, but I'm in Utah, so it's kind of weird here. Anyway, my question is, from a comment, I'd like to get your thoughts about how the Democratic Party gets some new leadership, because obviously they failed spectacularly.
Yep.
And the one silver lining I see out of all of this is the Clinton machine and the triangulation stuff is just, it's done. So how do we get Keith Ellison in? What can I do to make sure we get some new blood in the leadership, and where do we go from here?
That's a great question. And I think, you know, there's stuff like, obviously, I think MoveOn.org has a petition supporting Keith Ellison. I think if you go to, you know, I imagine all of those groups. I think the PCCC has come out with something. I think that DFA, no, DFA probably not, although maybe, has come out. I mean, I think that's the thing to do. And I think, you know, calling your local congressperson, or I guess in Utah, it wouldn't necessarily be a Democrat, but call a...
No, it's Jason Chaffetz, and he doesn't care.
No, he probably doesn't. I think, you know, go to, you know, a Bernie Sanders website, see if they've put up anything. I mean, I think, like, just go on social media and just talk about it. I mean, I think the idea is that there has to be a feeling that from the Democratic Party that people want to support these people. And then keep your eyes out, because once the Keith Ellison thing is settled, then I think, you know, as we were talking about with Cliff, people ought to head towards the Senate and the House campaign committees, because those are, you know, talking about who comes in next. And I think there's going to be more opportunities for this stuff. And then I think just, you know.
Yeah, because we need to start organizing for 2018.
Yesterday.
Now.
Yeah.
Today.
I agree. I agree totally. And I think it doesn't hurt to go around and talk to your neighbors, particularly in Utah. I imagine there's a fairly decent sized appetite to hear about why Donald Trump may not be, you know, I mean, he's just won with the electoral vote, just squeaked in barely. He did not win the majority of votes from Americans. So appreciate.
Nah, they don't care around here. Utah is like the equivalent of a Eastern Bloc country circa 1983. Oh. It's a one party state.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Isn't McMullen? Aren't there enough
awful people
who are happy about McMullen? No.
Nah, McMullen never had a chance. He was just an outlet for the Mormons who actually take their values seriously. But, you know, Trump was going to carry the state no matter what.
All right. Well, appreciate the call. Hang in there.
Yeah, you too. Thanks. Bye.
So Keith Ellison has gotten the support of Chuck Schumer and Elizabeth Warren. Probably, my guess, not in that order sequentially, although I think Schumer will have you believe otherwise.
I am a major supporter of Comrade Keith Ellison.
But Bernie Sanders has given Keith Ellison his support. So far, it sounds like he's only running against Howard Dean for the DNC chair. You can talk to your local Democratic Party and call them and say... Just call them and say, like, you know, I don't know if you guys, because I think maybe members of the DNC across the country probably vote on this. And I think, you know, calling your local Democratic Party, whether or not they're in power or not, I support Keith Ellison. I'm going to be much more inclined to come out and help in your projects in the future if Keith Ellison is the chair of the DNC. And, you know, aside from the fact that he's a co-chair, I believe, of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, besides from the fact that he comes from a very, very liberal district in Minnesota, which makes him, you know, it's got his back in terms of where he can go nationally. But the guy's very adept and sharp. I mean, here he is basically making a prediction that apparently, I guess myself included on some level, people thought was laughable months and months ago about Donald Trump. Was it? July of 2015.
All I want to say is that anybody... well, from the Democratic side of the fence, who's terrified of the possibility of President Trump, better vote, better get active, better get involved, because this man has got some momentum, and we better be ready for the fact that he might be leading the Republican ticket.
Next, I know you don't believe that, but I want to go on.
Sorry to laugh.
Next
hey,
week,
you know, George, we had Jesse Ventura in Minnesota win the governorship. Nobody thought he was going to win. I'm telling you, stranger things have happened.
Well, and also, George,
so he was just predicting that he would win the Republican primary. Oh, well. And they laughed at him. I mean, I thought he would do well in the primary as well.
But he called the primaries, messed up the general.
What are you going to do? Well, now you can go out and protest.
Yeah, exactly.
Here is Bernie Sanders, who, again, you know, look, there are fights that someone like Chuck Schumer is willing to not engage in, and there'll be fights that he's are engaging in that'll be a little bit behind the scenes on some level. But it is encouraging to have Bernie Sanders come out for Keith Ellison and then watch Elizabeth Warren and Chuck Schumer line up behind him. I don't know if they would have done a different thing or not. But certainly Bernie Sanders has a lot more power than he had this time last year, frankly. And just the idea that when they got to go speak to somebody about Donald Trump, Wolf Blitzer, gets on the phone with Bernie Sanders. That's encouraging. Here he is talking about holding Donald Trump accountable.
If you had been his competitor, and that's a big if you had been his competitor, Senator, do you think you could have beaten him?
I don't think it's makes a whole lot of sense to do Monday morning quarterbacking right now. The election is over. Donald Trump won. Between you and me, Wolf, I would have loved to have had the opportunity to run against them, but that did not end up being the case. Right now, where we are is where we are. I intend to work with President Trump on those issues where he will, in fact, work for the middle class and working families in this country. I will vigorously oppose him if he appeals to racism or sexism or some of the other discriminatory measures that he brought up during his campaign.
But it never crossed your mind that you might have done better against him? You might have actually won if you had been the Democratic nominee?
What good does it do now? You know, the election is over, and, Hillary, I did my best to see that Hillary Clinton get elected. I was out in some 12 states during the last week with, 21 rallies. So the election is over, and we've got to look to the future.
I mean, you know, that's one of the things that Bernie Sanders did so well. It's like, you know, they want him to say that. He, you know, didn't pretend. I mean, it's clear from that answer. Yeah, no, of course Bernie Sanders thinks he could have won, not just because everybody thinks they could have won, but there's a lot of evidence that he could have won. And, you know, but he also knows, like, the only value in that is what we're going to do in the future. And, you know, this is also a good opportunity. It's not just the lessons. I mean, people don't learn lessons. I don't think Chuck Schumer has learned a lesson. It's just a question of he may have a clearer assessment of where the power is right now.
That's a better way of putting it.
And because he's not going to change. There's no teaching a lesson to Chuck Schumer or the Democrats. It's just that, like, the power is here. I'm going to do my best to not have to respond to it. But I realize at certain points I'm going to have to. Just understand that's the dynamic. There's not going to be like this moment like, well, I see the light now. Oh, my God.
How can I see the light when I've always been struggling for revolution?
Exactly. There's no moment here where we, like, you know, like they've learned a lesson. That doesn't, that's just not the way the politics work. They already know what they want. They're just, it's just basically, making sure that what you want is what you get, as opposed to what they want. That's the only difference. Just getting back to the point that we were making earlier, you know, a lot of people want to do stuff. And in addition to sort of supporting moves in the Democratic Party to get more progressives in positions of leadership in the short term. And in the short term, you know, going out and being supportive of protests and going out and being supportive of people who are reminding other people who are really trying to weaken Donald Trump's hold and the Republican Party's hold on the country, right? By reminding people that Donald Trump did not get the majority of Americans' vote. In fact, not only did he not get the majority of Americans' vote, another person did. So it's not just he had a plurality. He didn't even win a plurality of the votes. And perhaps, you know, trumpeting, as it were, the policies that he that would be helpful in driving a wedge between him and the Republicans. But it's also going out and showing your support for people that he has targeted and letting them know that they're not alone. And if you think that there is really any place that you can do this that is a waste, you're wrong. Here's a video from Royal Oak, Michigan, of middle school students. I mean, this is unfortunate, but if you have kids over the age of 10 or 11, and maybe even a little bit younger than that, you know, this is a great opportunity for you to say, we don't share the values of Donald Trump. And that these kids, and I find the most effective way to make kids feel a little bit safer, particularly in situations where you can't actually make them feel safe, is to make them feel like they can actually make a difference, that you give them a task and an agenda, because the subtext of saying you can do X, Y, or Z is that they actually have some measure of control, and that it's whatever it is you're going to be facing is not so insurmountable. But if you have kids, you can tell them that if you ever see a situation where people are repeating Donald Trump stuff or intimidating other people who are more vulnerable to these type of attacks, that you can go up and help these people by sitting next to them in the cafeteria, or, you know, just tell them you got their back. I mean, you watch something like this, and knowing that there are kids in this school, Latino kids, who are dealing with this stuff. Listen to these kids who apparently started some type of spontaneous chant in this middle school, yelling, "Build that wall." It's just a cafeteria full of kids chanting that. I don't know if they know what they're doing or not. I imagine they do. I mean, they're, you know, look, kids do mean things when they're that age. But, and, you know, I get that. But you can, you know, this is what happens when their parents do it. That's basically the problem.
I just think that when you say, do they know what they're doing? It's very difficult to, they know what they're saying. They know what it means. But understanding the implications of it and understanding the people that they want to become.
Right. No,
it's middle school. So
yeah, I understand.
No, they don't.
I'm not holding the kids accountable for that. It's their parents. They're obviously where they're getting it from. And
or just television.
Donald Trump. Yeah. But you know, there is opportunities for, you know, other kids to step in, but, it's just sad when you see shit like that. What should we do? Kim Guilfoyle? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Can we do Guilfoyle first and Van Jones as a touch of a palate cleanser?
Please. Here is Kim Guilfoyle on Fox. And I don't know. Apparently yesterday, my understanding is they wiped Donald Trump's website of his ban on Muslims proposal and then put it back up. And here is Kim Guilfoyle already attempting. I mean, you see so much of this by the Trump surrogates now. Well, yeah, some of the things he said was unfortunate, and we're hoping that he won't be saying those anymore. You know, I think a lot of these people were like, oi, I didn't think he would win. I just thought this would help me with my positioning of my career. And, yeah, this could be a problem. This shit gets real. Here's Kim Guilfoyle telling Juan Williams, well, basically a total lie on Fox's The Five.
I think that right now you have to talk about Trump and Republicans, and in specific, Speaker Paul Ryan, because Ryan is a guy, for example, who's all about things like, you know, let's make some cuts to things like Social Security. Let's balance this budget. Let's get it back working, right? And what do you hear from Trump? I'll never touch Social Security. I'll never touch Medicare. I'll never touch Medicaid. And when it comes to the wall, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said, I won't even bring up the wall. I mean, I'm not going to pay for some wall. So you have to start to think, what about a deportation force to get out all these? You know what? I think the Republicans would be like, excuse me, sir, what are you talking about? Well, should we block Muslims from coming to the country? President Trump, can we slow down? Let's talk about something.
Well, he never said he was blocking Muslims from coming to the country. Yeah, so now you're just making up things.
Oh, that's true.
Shocking.
What fiction?
But banned and blocked are kind of the same.
Yeah.
All right.
I like how Juan Gonzalez, Juan Williams doesn't even take her saying that seriously. Like, oh, yeah, right, fiction. Give me a break. And I love how also, like, after he does this litany of horrible things, he didn't say block Muslims. He didn't say block. He didn't say the word block. This is the stuff that they do when they already know that they're in trouble. Like, I remember being at the RNC convention on what was then Scarborough Country on MSNBC. And Ron Silver, who, if you can believe it or not, was at that time a prominent Republican talking head. And I got into a fight on air about whether or not the Bush administration had sold Iraq as an imminent threat to this country. And he said, they never said the word imminent. No. They never said the word imminent. And I just said, Ron, you want it? I would love to see President Bush get out there during this convention and say, I never said Iraq was an imminent threat. That's when they know there's a little bit of a problem. Remember, Donald Trump did not win the majority of American votes. In fact, he was not. There was someone else who did. They've got to contend with that. And, you know, getting back to that that middle school where you saw kids yelling, build that wall. And Latino kids there having to sit through that. And there's, you know, a litany of stuff now where you're seeing like Nazi graffiti or attacks on all sorts of people, women. I mean, there's sites now that are basically just collecting these things. Again, the Trump surrogates want to pretend that none of this is real now. Like, as if, like, well, we only use that for the election. We only use this for the election. And here is Van Jones saying, yeah, that's not going to fly right now.
Muslim parents that are afraid right now aren't afraid because these kids with these signs. They're not. They're afraid because he said over and over again that he wanted to ban people of their faith. That lands like a bomb
from
in the
coming into the country.
Hold on a second. You want to explain to me why people who are scared shouldn't be afraid, and you want
but for you to say internment camps.
Hey, I didn't say internment camps. People are afraid of
but
that.
But you should correct that. You should correct that fear. That's not true. Donald Trump has never proposed internment camps.
You have to correct that fear. You guys won, and you need to back off. You need to have a little bit of empathy and understanding for people who are afraid because your candidate has been one of the most explosively provocative candidates in the history of our country. And there's a price to be paid for that. Hold on a second.
Let him finish.
I am not finished. I'm not going to be talked over tonight. I'm not. You have people who are terrified. And you have to take some responsibility for it. I am not spreading the terror. I am trying to damp it
down.
Let me finish my point. Listen. You have people, Latino families, who say, this guy has said he's going to deport millions of people. They don't know should they sell their homes. They are terrified. That is a real fear. You have Muslims who have heard him say nothing good about the Muslim community the entire campaign. That's a real fear. And so they've heard him say, maybe he said it, but that's not what broke through. And so what we have to be able to do now, if you want unity, and I want unity, and I'm working harder for unity than anybody on this stage, I guarantee you. If you want unity, we have to hear the pain first before you tell people they're wrong to hurt.
And, you know, here's the thing is that he hasn't said internment camps. There is it is perfectly rational to add a yet on the end of that. Maybe he never will. But.
How do you deport that many people?
Well, I don't know. I mean, look, could you deport that many people?
No.
It would be very expensive, and you would have to trample on a lot of rights. But is it physically possible?
No, it's not currently.
Well, I mean, not currently. Yes, it would involve money being distributed out, and it would involve, let's say, doubling or tripling ICE's budget and having them create a special deportation thing. I mean, you could. Do it. He certainly promised it, right? I mean, in October, he put out a plan that says deport 2 million people within the first 100 days. His campaign put that out. Is it physically possible? Yes. Would it involve a tremendous amount of resources that would encroach upon civil liberties and terrify the country? Yes. Has he talked about putting Muslims in internment camps? No. But let's talk after ISIS attacks and kills 100 people. And the problem is, we can't have that conversation after that happens. Unless we have that conversation now. Or we can have that conversation after it happens, but nobody's going to listen. That's why this stuff needs to be brought up now. That's why when someone tells you, like, it's going a little far, you know, it's a little hyperbole. Yeah, the time to have that conversation is now. Because we got here 15 years later where he's talking about banning Muslims from just from entering the country because of something that happened 15 years ago. So this is a conversation that those of us who don't want it to happen here should need to discuss now. I mean, there needs to be plans on what to do in the event that ISIS realizes what Osama bin Laden realized, which is there's somebody in the White House who will actually do what I want, which is get their country embroiled in something that maybe they can't get out of. Because so far, Osama bin Laden's plan, like a T. It worked like a T. You look in what he wrote. We're going to get them involved here. We're going to drag them down like we did the Soviet Union. You know, we're still doing bombing raids in Iraq. And in terms of where our civil liberties are going, I mean, the pace in which we lose those may even increase. You know, I mean, to a certain extent, like, you know, Obama may have, like, had us on the verge of plateauing. I don't know that he was necessarily going against anything. He was on the verge of, like, plateauing. Like, we had stabilized, at least, in terms of how things were dropping. And not to his credit, many of those things were institutionalized. But that's the new baseline. That's the new baseline. After 9/11, they had the New York Police Department, in conjunction with the CIA, spying on Muslim youth groups all within
up till Maine.
Hundreds of miles, yep. hundreds of miles of New York City. That's the baseline now. So the idea of like internment camps or deporting 2 million people, It's a lot less far-fetched than it was a week ago. I can tell you that right now. Lot less far-fetched. Speaking of new baselines, yesterday we played a clip of Tom Cotton on Wolf Blitzer. Tom Cotton was one of the guys disappointed by Trump's win because he thought he was going to be in 2020. Now I think he's just sort of wants to be one of those guys in the Senate who is basically setting up, right? I mean, we know the baseline now is what Tom Cotton said on Wolf Blitzer yesterday, which is like, well, I don't consider waterboarding torture. And if we got to change some laws to make it, to make my opinion comport with the laws, that's what we should do. And if we got to disregard the Geneva Conventions, that's what we got to do. And here was his explanation as to why waterboarding was not torture. I want to remind you. Here it is.
But ultimately, I would say that anything that American troops volunteer for, that radio DJs volunteer for, is not torture.
Yeah, radio DJs volunteer for. Let's go check out what that radio DJ said. It was a guy named Man Cow. Here he is. Here's a clip of him back in 2009. On Chicago Big 89 radio. Here he is actually getting the waterboard, which he volunteered for, that Tom Cotton is basing his assessment that we should change the laws to say is not torture.
It is over Man Cow's head.
We're going to do it on five, okay?
Okay.
One, two, I lied.
Hey.
Ooh, no. Water going. All right, that's it. That's it. All right.
Oh God.
Man Cow is soaked.
All right. Let's go and see. So there he is. He's soaked, ladies and gentlemen. Let's here he is when he's asked, like, what was your experience with this? Now that he has volunteered to do it, this right-wing, understand, right-wing talk show host.
All that's been done to this country, and I heard about water being dropped on someone's face, and I never considered torture. Even when I was laying there, I thought, this is going to be no big deal. I go swimming. It's going to be like being in the tub. It is such an odd feeling to have water poured down your nose and your mouth with your head back. It was instantaneous. I thought I could hold out 30 seconds, 60 seconds. It was instantaneous. And I don't want to say this. I do not want to say this. Absolutely torture.
You do.
Absolutely. I mean, that's drowning.
So you felt like you were going to drown.
When I was a kid, I drowned. I drowned. My brother pulled me out of this pool that I fell in, mm-hmm. and I had to be revived. And I remember the feeling, and that it is the feeling of drowning.
That was a flashback to your childhood there.
Worse than that. I mean, it was. Yeah, it was.
You look shaken. You look shaken. Your hands are shaking a bit. I can see your hands shaking, and you're absolutely soaked. Your hair, your shirt, you're just completely soaked.
You're soaked.
And your eyes. You look pale.
I thought I could hold out, and it was instantaneous and horrific. And I really, look, I wouldn't have done this. If I knew it was going to be this bad, I would not have done it. Marine, thank
you. Cock.
And when we do that, folks, and when we've done that to people, 182 times, was it?
Yeah, I think with Zabeta, was it 182? I had to look. I think it was.
Of course it's torture. But this is it, folks. Like, this is what we're going to get. Tom Cotton going on TV saying, we got to change the laws to legalize torture. That's the new baseline. So when there's an attack, if there's an attack, it's bad enough if it was George Bush's regime starting with this baseline, but now it is a more virulent right-wing movement where a senator, Harvard Law School graduate, is calling for changing the laws to have torture already before anything's happened. And a president, Donald Trump. I'm sorry, the idea of any of it becomes so much more plausible. That's like there's a lot of things that we've got to do in terms of resisting and preparing. One is sort of like the normal, horrible politics scenario where we get a repeal of health insurance for millions of people, where we get Medicare privatized, Social Security privatized, where we see the destruction of the EPA, the FDA, of Dodd-Frank, of the Consumer Protection, Financial Protection Bureau. You know, worst case scenario in terms of banal politics. And then people also have to maintain in the back of their heads, like, you know, what is the plan? How are we going to react if the country is attacked again? Which was, you know, that was a problem even with President Obama. But Obama would have been at least an obstacle to the worst of the worst, as opposed to an accelerant of the worst of the worst. People should understand that. Man, Cow Mullins.
Total cuck. I was disgusted by that.
How weak he was?
It only lasts like 15 seconds. Yeah, it's torture. Clearly a pre-Trump Republican.
Pre-11-8.
Mr. Trump would be able to handle that for like 5 minutes.
Calling from a 330 area code. Sorry, I just turned on my IM. 330?
Yeah, hey, this is Ryan from Ohio.
Hi, Ryan.
Hey, I was wondering what you think about this. Do you think if Keith Ellison gets, or even Howard Dean gets made the new DNC chair, do you think we're going to see a pushback to get rid of the superdelegates?
I mean, that's, I think that's, you know, certainly in the DNC is already they're going to be looking that anyways to a certain extent. But I mean, you know, yeah, maybe. I just don't think that the superdelegates are that big of a deal. I really don't. I think that so much, you know, that is like so off point that, you know, I would hate to waste really too much time or effort on it. I mean, if they knock down the numbers, great. If they don't, it doesn't mean anything. I don't think it ever meant anything. I honestly believe, like, I don't think there was a, I think there's one but for about the primary race. I mean, to, you know, if we have to relitigate it, and that is Bernie Sanders entered the race too late because he was running as a protest candidate. And I think if there were no superdelegates at all, that Bernie Sanders would have ended up with the exact same amount of pledged delegates that he ended up with.
I think that I think that's fair, because I think Bernie, I mean, he even said himself that he didn't think he was going to win. He was just, you know, kind of pull the conversation left.
Yep.
But I think I personally find a problem with the kind of war of opinion that the Democrats waged this election in favor of Hillary Clinton. And I'm just worried that it could cause the Democrats to put up another unelectable candidate in 4 years. And that's why I just, you know, I want opinion left out of it.
You want opinion left out? You want people, you want there to be no people who give opinions on who should be the nominee?
Okay. No, I'm sorry. That's I worded that wrong. What I mean is I think that, like, the party elite's opinion gets vocalized a lot more, and I don't think that should be the case.
Yeah, I mean, but yeah, I agree with you. But guess what? Like, that's going to happen no matter what. It's just a question of, like, who are going to be those people? Like, the dynamic of, you know, that we want to change, you know, like, who gets to go on you know, like, what group? No, the people who have the power go on TV. When you're talking about those people, that's what it is. I mean, other people squeak by, but there's a reason why they're going to Bernie Sanders now. You know,
well,
I mean,
I'd say that he's probably in his position of power because of how popular he is with the voters, with, you know, the base. It's not necessarily because he's popular. I mean, if you ask Chuck Schumer,
well, Hillary Clinton got more
Sanders
votes in the primary. It's just that you and I want Bernie to be there, and we don't want whomever else to be there. I mean, like, if you agree that there was no, that the superdelegates, okay, didn't impact the outcome of the race. Now, I can understand the argument. The argument is that it created the sense of her inevitability. But
yeah,
we know that inevitability can be defeated. We saw it 8 years earlier. And also, raising all that money creates an inevitability. Like, that was with Jeb Bush. He had raised all that money. People thought he was inevitable. I mean, that's not the but for. I mean, you could spend your time trying to get the superdelegates thing, or you can actually just spend your time on stuff that's actually going to really empower the people you want to be empowered. That's all I'm saying.
You're right.
That's it.
I concede.
I mean, you know, whatever. Let's get rid of the superdelegates. I mean, I do think that there is some value in having some type of a stopgap. But I don't, I think, you know, I don't know what that is, but, you know, well, you know, if, you know, if the Republicans had an ability to stop Donald Trump, I think there would have been some value in it that from a Democratic standpoint. But I don't know what, you know, I mean, frankly, if Hillary Clinton had been indicted, I don't think she would. But let's just say hypothetically, I think that the Democrats should have an ability to say, like, no, we don't want you to as our nominee, even though you've just won the majority of delegates. I don't know what that mechanism is, but in this instance, the superdelegates, in my mind, did not keep Bernie Sanders from winning. But I appreciate the call.
Oh, no.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay. Real quick, you were talking yesterday about finding a nickname for Trump.
Yeah.
I really like Cheeto Benito. People have been calling him online.
Cheeto Benito? All right.
Yeah, like an orange Mussolini.
Yeah, no, I like that.
It's respectable.
I like that. Yeah. We'll put that in the running.
Great guy.
Nice. I like that. Yeah, that was a good idea.
That's a good idea.
Cheeto Benito. But I think you really need to use the first name. lying Ted, Crooked Hillary, Weak Jeb.
Low energy.
Crazy Bernie.
Does everybody miss me now? I might be the only one up that stage.
Calling from an 832 area code. Who's this?
Hey, Robert from Florida. How you doing?
Good. What's up, Robert?
So it was a couple things. One was I've been online something starting where, you know, in Brexit, because of the anti-immigrant feelings, people started wearing safety pins to identify themselves as somebody that would stand up and be available for people who were being bullied or harassed. And so that's starting to catch up here. I've seen it in a couple of different places.
Really? So what do they do? They put it on their lapel?
Yeah, it's like a pin, but it's a safety pin. You know, the operative word being safety.
Right.
So
that's
if you need help, I'm here for you. That also would serve the purpose of sort of solidifying the movement that seems to be starting around, you know, the anti-Trump movement. It would say, I'm a member of that. Right?
I think that is, I wonder if there's ever been any sort of academic research in that. But, you know, it certainly worked for the armbands for the Nazis. And I think, like, you know, it works. We see it, you know, like... the ribbons on the back of the cars and stuff like that. And, mm-hmm. you know, that there's a reason why people do that. And, interesting idea. Appreciate the call.
Yeah. The other thing, I want your opinion on it. So we keep focusing on the federal level, and I've been pissed for years about why we keep losing states and what's going on there. I mean, especially because, you know, it's most people don't pay attention to politics, and so they get their messaging, they get the place that they believe is through some organization. So for Democrats, it used to be unions.
Yep.
Of course, we allowed the Republicans to decimate them by taking back states. We could strengthen unions.
Yep.
The Republicans have had a messaging service for years, which is right wing media. So they have their messaging service that their guys go to. To get their information and
churches
believe how
too.
They should act.
Churches, too.
Yes, yes. But Democrats, I mean, our messaging has just been decimated. And so I'd like your opinion on why we've lost states and how we can stop that. And by the way, I'm going to get in contact with my state party and do what I can for them. But yeah, that's
good for you. And when you're there, you know, tell them Keith Ellison.
I will.
Let me answer. I'll hang up and answer. I can only tell you that, like, you know, during the Bush years, things like drinking liberally really became, you know, was an example of creating a social, creating a new third place where people would socialize and come together. There's been many attempts at this. I mean, I remember... I think it was some of Nader's people were trying to do something like this, and it just couldn't happen. I think now we're going to see a lot more. Maybe we should do Majority Report meetups across the country. You know, even if it starts with two or three people. Brooklyn, we could probably get everybody listening to the show.
That's what I'm saying.
But beyond that, I think there's going to be, I think you're going to see a lot of money poured into stuff like that. I think you're going to see a lot of money and a lot of efforts to like do things like attorney general races. And because I would imagine we're going to see an unprecedented amount of money coming to the left. I mean, the problem that we've always had on the left in terms of like that money is that, one, usually the agenda is contrary to the people who have the money, right? Like, if I'm doing really well as a massive capitalist, I don't know if I'm going to want to give all that money to Bernie Sanders. So part of it is going to be, I don't know, hopefully groups will start up and do this. Part of it, there'll be more funding probably from the outside of the like the grassroots. I think there's just going to be more opportunities for a lot of this stuff. But in the meantime, yeah, go to your Democratic state party and trade your efforts for, you know, make sure they know who you're supportive of. It's like Survivor. You come in, if you're the guy who can catch the fish, they're not going to vote you off for a while. They're going to listen to what you say if you're the one who can catch the fish.
Let's get you some rest this weekend.
My God, I need it. I almost fell asleep watching Survivor this week. Yes, Kelly.
I just wanted to say about the safety pin thing. I was going to call it a movement, but I don't know. It's just on social media, and I know it's been a thing after Brexit, that it struck me when I saw it as more of something that it's unlike the magnets and stickers that people put on their cars about supporting the troops, because that does make other people feel better about themselves. And maybe the safety pins thing does too. But if you're an ally and you want to intervene and help somebody, just do it. Like, wearing the safety pin would make me feel better walking around in my neighborhood, because I'm the other and I feel, and now I'm just like, oh God, people think that I voted for Trump. And I just feel like, oh, if I put safety pins on, then it would, you know, make me look good.
I'm not totally sure I know what you're saying, but I imagine if I'm on the subway and I'm wearing a safety pin and, wearing hijab and you know, going into work, and I'm aware of what that safety pin means, I would imagine that would make me feel a little bit just better that other people are showing some measure of support in that way, whether I needed the help in that moment or not.
I like the idea of that. I think my question I was going to ask that guy is, did he see it on a blog, on a number of blogs, or has he seen it out in the wild? Because I worry that it's a signifier that are only people that are going to read, like, New York Mag, like, had an article about it, going to know what that actually signifies. Like, I think
I don't
it
know.
Needs to
I mean,
be more overt.
You never know. I mean, I suppose you get a pin, like, I'll help you out. Like, would probably be
some actual overt symbolism.
But there is also some value, it seems to me, in having something that's a little bit semi-secret. You know, so, I mean, it's, I don't know. It cuts both ways.
I guess not only Donald Trump embracing Ivanka.
Not only semi-secret, but free.
What are we talking
or
about?
Cheap.
Oh, I think it's pretty clear what I'm talking about.
I think it should be really expensive. I think we should have like you should wear like a very fancy, like a Rolex watch. Call him from a 602 area code. Who's this?
So I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, it's bad face. This is electrifying.
Yeah, this is
but you got to cut it off.
I think it should be really expensive. I think we should have like a...
Sheila Collins, Saudi student is beaten, killed in Wisconsin. My understanding is it was November 1st, right? They're still investigating.
They're still investigating.
Are you there, 602?
Hello?
Hello? Who's this?
Hi. My name's Nicolette. I'm calling from Arizona.
Hi, Colette. What's on your mind?
I had a question about the whole thing that's happening with the electoral vote, and I know like Lady Gaga is doing a thing, and also Martin O'Malley just signed a pledge saying that, or just basically saying that Maryland will from now on go with whoever won the popular vote.
Oh, good.
What do you think about? Yeah, what do you think about the whole idea that we can actually? I mean, it's far fetched, but that we can actually put Hillary Clinton in the White House still by switching some electors over.
All right. So the
especially in the. Oops, sorry, go ahead.
All right, you're conflating two things. All right, one is
okay.
The concept of unfaithful electors. Now, there were two of them who had announced before the election in Washington State, and, mm-hmm. and I only know the name, or I think had identified one, who said that even though they were Democratic electors, they would not be voting for Hillary Clinton. So there was, you know, some people are like, what if it comes down to 269, 270? They would not be faithful mm-hmm. electors. And there's, you know, the state... You can't be forced to be electors. There's fines in some states. I think in Washington State, they would have gotten fined $1,000, and that's it. It's conceivable, it seems to me, that you could find a couple of those in this race. But Trump had 290 electoral votes, I think it was, right? And...
Yeah,
there are still, I think, 20 extant. So let's just say those 20 went to Clinton. So it's 248. You would need 25, I guess, who would have to sort of be unfaithful. I don't think the chances are huge that that could happen. I think they're probably slim, but I definitely think there's value in it. I definitely think that there's value in saying that, like, look, all you need to do, because the electors are not bound by it. You know, everybody was acknowledging that there were at least two who were not going to vote for Clinton if she had won. So I think, signing anything or just, you know, promoting that idea, I think it's healthy one way or another. The other issue is the national popular vote, where you need enough states who make up 270 electoral votes to all agree to come into a pact with each other, to basically just agree, like, look, we're going to award all our electoral votes. Instead of having electors for different parts, we're going to award all our electoral votes to whoever wins the most amount of votes amongst the however many states it takes to make up 217, right? So if it's like, I don't know, 17 states, whoever wins, that's the agreement that they're signing on to. And I don't know where we're at right now with Maryland added to this, where we're at to that in terms of reaching, enough states to make up 270 electoral votes. But we're not too far. But
I would also just like to just add briefly, I think the other really important thing about this electoral college process is it's essential that we keep delegitimizing him. I mean, I support, again, it's totally implausible, even more implausible, but I support Michael Moore's, you know, impeachment plan out of the gate. I think we have to handle mm-hmm. it like that. It has to be totally delegitimized.
Well, for this election specifically, though, about what we can do before Trump is even inaugurated, I guess a lot of people are wondering, well, just practically, like what states to target. People are looking at, I guess, states who are really close or states that maybe voted for Trump but have, like, Democratic governors.
Yep.
And there aren't many. But I just kind of wanted to, like, encourage everyone out there to, especially if you're one of those states, to, you know, call around, petition, get the word out that this is something that could still happen. And also, look on change.org, I think. There's a petition going around also raising money for faithless electors who were maybe slapped with that fine if they wanted to switch, that will pay the fine. It's fine.
Yeah, pledging that. That's a good
smart
idea.
Right. So I would just kind of encourage everyone to look into that. And, I mean, just because Trump won the Electoral College doesn't mean that we have to deal with 4 years of this president. I don't feel like everyone should necessarily accept that and be defeatist about it just yet. I mean, he's not inaugurated yet.
Well, I mean, I think the point of doing that has, you know, two things. One, it's possible. It's possible. It's not likely.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But that you could find those 25 or so, you know, or more faithless electors. But it also just helps to remind people in the country and in the media and society at large that he did not win the popular vote. So look, there's not a lot of options right now. And so anything mm-hmm. that is like, you know, you can make even the slightest bit of argument is a net positive, I think people should do.
Okay.
Appreciate the call.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Sam. Bye. Bye.
Well, she didn't thank the rest of us. Very rude.
What am I, chopped liver? I'm just sitting here. Oh, don't mind me.
That's fine. I'm not upset about Donald Trump being president at all.
I'll sit here in the dark. Alex Gap, any chance you could have on some serious Marxist with a discussion of the nature of the state and democracy under capitalism?
We do that fairly regularly?
I don't know. We had David Harvey on.
With David Harvey, I'm going to have Bhaskar again on pretty soon. But I just feel like every time people, we had Peter Fraze.
Aren't we out to him for that piece in the thingamajig?
Oh, the two Jacobin guys? Yeah. I don't know that that's really a Marxist piece per se, but it's in Jacobin.
But he's not a Marxist. I mean, he's not a, is he?
Bhaskar?
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
Hmm. But those guys, it was all four of them who wrote it, right? The four people who wrote that
piece? I
thought
it was two pieces. We actually should get it connected on that again, because I'm not sure we're thinking the same thing.
I love your show, but one of my issues, I think your conception of the state is too optimistic, and sadly, only libertarian callers will argue otherwise.
So you want anarchists on then, maybe?
Bondicant. I mean, I don't think you're looking for someone, for a Marxist who's not pro-state. Not sure how that works out.
Yeah, I also feel, again, if you have specifics, please tell us, but I think we do book a fair amount of people.
Bondicant. Okay, so I know there's literally less than 0% chance of this happening. What a joke, but imagine for a second woke Chuck Schumer. Oh, that was what we were talking about this morning.
Look at that.
Go ahead, do it.
I have always supported my comrade and proud, shining, beautiful Muslim brother, Keith Ellison, to lead the Democratic Party. It is only through a message of black liberation and economic democratization that we can reclaim our party. And I've said this from the beginning.
Have we mentioned the DNC Zach Donner Brazil thing yet?
Oh, we should do that.
Oh, no. Yeah, this is a pretty fun story. So, Donna Brazil, it's unclear. This story comes from, I think, Jennifer Bendry, right, at the Huffington Post. Got it here in my package here somewhere. Here it is. So Donna Brazil has a meeting of the DNC staff. Kemp Champion pointed out to me there was 150 people there, and I had said the other day 15 people in an office. This is probably
a very Kem Champion point.
The point is that, I mean, if you look at like what the leadership of the organization, I think there are about 15 people who are.
Don't try to get out of it, Sam. We all know the office numbers.
You're discounting the power of the IT guy who and the person who is in charge of making sure there's donuts in the office to sway the election.
The donut person was a total Clinton shill.
Well, maybe if everybody supported Hillary Clinton, we'd start seeing chocolate glazed. When we come in, I mean, I know people love the French roast coffee, but until we see some, it's just going to be that pre-ground Colombian. Sorry. So on Thursday, yesterday, Democratic Party officials held their first staff meeting since Hillary Clinton's loss to Donald Trump, and apparently did not go well. Donna Brazil, who's the interim leader of the Democratic National Committee, and the one passing
the CNN question. Guess what, Clinton team? In Michigan, during a water crisis in a major deindustrialized town filled with your voter base, there will be a question that involves said crisis. Don't tell anybody it came from me.
About the need to have hope for wins going forward, a staffer apparently only identified as Zach. Now, I don't know.
Hey, man, I'm Zach. Fuck you, Donner Brazil.
Basically, he gets up, stands up with a question. Now, I've been in at least a half a dozen of these meetings as each regime of Air America failed. So I'm willing to bet there was a lot of pizza at this meeting. That's what they always do. We're having a pizza meeting. And everybody gets in. And usually what happens is, like, nobody speaks up because there's still a chance the whole enterprise may continue on. Nobody wants to get fired at that moment. And they're looking around the room, and you don't know who's going to be in charge tomorrow. So this takes some guts. So Zach stands up and he goes, why should we trust you as chair to lead us through this? You backed a flawed candidate. Your friend, former DNC chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz, they didn't say that. Your friend plotted through this to support your own gain and yourself. Now, some DNC staffers started to boo, told him to sit down. Brazil began to answer, but Zach, no, I'm not going to have it. You're part of the problem, he continued. You and your friends will die of old age, and I'm going to die from climate change. You and your friends let this happen, which is going to cut 40 years off my life expectancy. He gathered his things. He began to walk out. Brazil called after him, asked him where he's going to go out, and he said, asking where he was going, he told her to go outside and tell people there why she should be leading the party. Two DNC staffers confirmed this exchange.
Has anybody seen a hacky sack? I'm going to take it on the way out. Fuck you.
Yeah, I mean, I think
Zach speaks for me.
And, you know, this is good. You know, and someone actually, it was interesting. Somebody on my Twitter feed says, I'm going to bet that guy was a white guy. And I think, I mean, I think he probably is. And I think that, you know, there was, I think the idea being that, like, if this was a, I don't know, I guess you could say, like, you know, if this guy is a white boss, and I'm not sure why that's relevant. And I think it's probably
true. I'm sure he
true.
Wouldn't have said it, though, but, to Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Sure.
I think he probably is confident that he's going to land on his feet in a way. But you know what? If you have that confidence that you are going to land on your feet, good for you.
Exactly.
For, you know, putting your privilege to use.
Exactly.
Because at a time like this, we need to see that from anybody who feels like they're confident in those situations, because we know there's a lot of people who aren't. Because I have no doubt there's at least some other people in that room who feel the same way, but probably feel like, I got to pay for, you know, my kids. I need the health care. I got a sick mom, whatever it is. If you have the opportunity to speak up in that moment, you should be the first person to do it.
I don't have a condo and kids. I got a massive weed stash in Burlington, man. And I'm going to take this opportunity to say, fuck you, Donna Brazil.
Honestly.
That's,
like,
great.
I think we know where Zach was confident he was going to end up as a chief of staff for a certain New York senator. That's all of a sudden very enthusiastic about Keith
Zach
Ellison.
Speaks for me. Their cronies and their establishment friends who ignored the base, rigged the primary, and suppressed the Bernie Sanders vote and every step of the way. And Sam, you've become quite establishment over the last several months.
I like it. Like, Chuck Schumer is like, I'm not going to have an interview with you. You're simply the mouthpiece of the establishment. Look at you, how you've sold out with your fancy sweaters.
Enjoy your time on Hayes.
I remember a time where you wouldn't even wear a college shirt on Fridays.
Enjoy your time on Hayes. By the way, yes. Hayes is a total sellout. I remember on Up With Chris, that was a radical show. But now he's become a total shill for the Democratic establishment, which we must fight. As Jill Stein said, the lesser evil paves the way for the greater evil.
Look at you walking around with your fancy Indochino suit.
So, Zach, where would you like the lava lamp in the office?
You and your hairy razors.
Assalamu alaikum, Zach. I would like to begin, before we have this rap session, I would like to begin with a formal prayer to Mecca.
It's time for our morning prayers.
This is a time for open exchange and to just, you know, in the patriarchy was so Lydia, but we need to listen to Mother Gaia to guide us in our next actions. So everyone, just rap. Just the say rap whatever feels, begins. You know.
Trust now, just remember, if you appreciate what he's saying, the fingers go up and wiggle back and forth, just like this.
Wow. You know, Zach, what you just said really resonated with me. So I want to mirror what you just said back to you and share my own reflection.
If I could, mic check. Keith Ellison, number one.
My shining black, beautiful brother.
12 years of cut.
Free Palestine. You have no idea how craven I am.
I have just purged my. I'm going door to door in the Senate offices in the Dirksen Senate building to get rid of those SodaStream machines.
We must embody the change we want to see in the world.
12 years of cuck. Sam, how do you foresee the media landscape changing in the next few years? Do you think it's possible that a Trump administration would seek to elevate and legitimize outlets like Breitbart and Drudge, thereby effectively creating an equivalent of Trump News? I mean, let me ask you this. Is there anybody here who thinks that Breitbart will not have a seat in the front row of the freaking press pool?
No.
I mean, it is. What's going to be fascinating is to watch MSNBC, what happens there, because I can tell you, a week ago, there was no doubt in my mind that the network was going to be back to where it was circa 2003, which was like Scarborough Country, Pat Buchanan, you know, Nachman, Jerry Nachman, like just some, you know, like CNN maybe even, you know, at that time. Now it's going to be interesting to see what happens because the ratings guy would say like we're going to get huge ratings during a Trump administration if we are where we were in 2005 with Keith Olbermann, 2006, 2007, as late as 2010. I filled in 2010 for Olbermann, and the numbers I got were like double what I got. And I can assure you, people were not saying like, oh, my God, Sam Cedar's full. It's just that that's what the network was doing. We're like double what the highest rated show was doing, you know, this time in 2014. But it's also conceivable to me that Comcast says we don't want to piss Trump off. Because if there's ever been a president who would use the FCC for payback purposes or would use antitrust or the DOJ or stand in the way of us making a business deal or whatever it is, it would be Trump.
Not exactly sure what the FCC is, but I'll use it.
It'll be interesting. I mean, and I'll be honest with you, like, you know, I think there's people who presume that MSNBC is a, you know, a big source of income for me, and it has sort of
that's why you've been shilling for Shillery the whole time.
Jaundiced my perspective on things, and you know, I thought like I'm probably done there, and then I was thinking, well, who knows? Maybe I'll be like the House liberal, you know, because they have a lot of Republicans and conservatives on there. Maybe they need, you know, maybe if they go this CNN, and to be honest with you, like a situation like that is almost more interesting to me. I mean, I enjoyed going on the Kudlow Report. And they're like, Barack Obama's spending too much money. And I'm like, Barack Obama's not spending enough money. And then just like, what?
Expected you to be like, well, that's not true. He's cut blah, blah, blah.
It's right,
like,
right.
Well, you don't even have any idea. Right. That guy should be breaking open the bank.
For me, being the guy who, you know, who cuts the fart at the dinner party is really where I feel more comfortable. I mean, maybe there's a better way of saying that.
Yeah, maybe so. Again, let's circle back to get you some sleep this weekend.
I don't want to keep myself from getting invited to dinner parties. I'm speaking metaphorically. But so I have no idea what's going to happen there. I think CNN is just going to continue on the way they're going. They always like stumble about, and they'll just look for the, you know, wherever they're going to get the most ratings. And I think Fox is going to move. I don't think they're going to move as close to CNN as I would have guessed a week ago either. I mean, there's so many different people whose plans have gone in different directions. Maybe they think there'll be value in, I have no idea. I mean, but nothing better is going to happen in that cable or corporate media space. I mean, I would hope that there's going to be some concerted effort to have a really to the left media organization. Like, I think you'll see maybe attempts to build another,
a current that works.
A current that works. I mean, personally, I still think that there's no business in radio anymore. There's no industry, but there's tremendous value in being on there, I think. And
so does that guy on Twitter.
What's that?
I said, so does that guy on Twitter.
What guy?
Radio critic.
Oh,
on
yeah,
Twitter.
Yeah. I think that being on, like an Air America would still have been just.
Is it also just because radio is like one of the only formats left where theoretically you could just stumble into something like some conservative could just be flipping the dial on a car trip and all of a sudden he hears us and like, whoa, what the hell am I hearing?
And mass media just has a certain power that is.
But even in TV, the numbers, relatively speaking, are just shrinking, like on cable, you know?
That's right. But the thing is that where are these numbers going? They're being disaggregated.
Yeah.
So any place,
So is mass media even going to exist that at all?
Well, but here's the irony, and I believe this is still the case. On broadcast television, which consistently gets less viewers than it did 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, are getting even higher rates because it's one of the few places where you can aggregate an audience. So their advertising rates are still going up. But I'm not even talking about the business model of a radio network. I happen to think that, yes, there is a business model for a radio network based upon advances in technology and, selling podcasts. I wouldn't make an exclusive radio thing, but, another Air America would be great, and I would do it. Yes, and I would avoid. There's certain players I would avoid. Actually, so I met last night a longtime IMer to the show.
That's exciting.
Yeah, and he asked me, "Who's Ron Hartenbaum?"
Oh, because
I listen to listen to a lot of shows, and his name comes up on other shows. And I said, "Like, is he?" Like, is he syndicator or what is, and I said, oh, because we raise his name in a joking fashion about some alternate universe show that sometimes shows up on this program. On like Halloween for some reason, and on April Fool's for another reason. I don't know why. And I just explained, oh, he's the guy who had told me that I was not going to get paid when I did that short live radio gig. For 8 months.
It's a great internship.
And wanted to know why I wouldn't continue to do it.
It was the most amazing because there were some calls that you would have where it's like, you know, especially at that point, like now we have a little bit of space. You can kind of move around. We're just sitting around essentially in a glorified closet. So I heard all of these calls and you could just tell like, all right, so no paycheck until January, and then you could hear on the other end almost like simultaneously like trying to convey to you information of like, oh no, might be well past January, but this is awesome, right?
The agreement was like I was willing to work for free for the first 60 to 90 days, and I said, you know, and they said, like, when they didn't say specifically, like, oh, you're not going to get paid till January, because we were partners in this. It was just like they laid out the numbers in a very obtuse way. And I said, like, I'm looking at what the revenue is and I'm looking at what the expenditure is. And I don't see how I get paid until at the very least January. And they're like, well, it's very difficult to calculate. I'm like, well, this show is unsustainable. And they're like, no, it's sustainable. And I'm like, well, it's sustainable because I'm not getting paid. Is it like, you know, we could do this forever. If nobody got paid, we could do this forever.
This guy's really unsettling.
And they're just like, yeah.
All right. That's what I do.
Anyways, that's a long way.
This guy's really onto something.
Jameson Jones,
smart guy.
On this Veterans Day, I'd like to remember our president-elect likes veterans who weren't captured, that those with PTSD aren't strong enough. Held a fundraiser for veterans claiming to raise $6 million and never would have sent anything if he wasn't called out, advocated for kicking veterans off Fifth Avenue, stating the situation was deplorable. If there's any silver lining, is that he responded to being called out. I like that first part about, like, remember, our president-elect likes veterans who weren't captured.
Special presidential election presidential message for all non-loser veterans.
Andy Anderson, McMullen was not an outlet for Mormons who take their values seriously. He was just a conservative candidate who was part of their isolated tribe. Can Michael please give us a Jewish Trump impression? Majority Report meetup sounds fantastic. Do it.
Oh, I mean, look, it's tremendous. And by the way, I thought it was disgusting. See, the thing is, it sort of weirdly works, I guess. Yeah, it's weird. It sounds weird.
Did Gary Johnson spoil this election? What does this election say about third parties? In light of the Electoral College and uneducated misinformation voters, is American democracy dead? I mean, I don't think you could say that Gary Johnson, because I would guess, I mean, you'd have to look at the data, right? But and I don't think people know, and I don't know if we'll ever know, but because I think the inclination is to believe that he took most of his votes from people who would otherwise vote Republican. Is American democracy dead? I think there's an existential threat to it. Glenn Greenwald taking the heat because he played a big part in selling out the U.S. I don't get what that means, says Baird Martin. Farmer Gillian, what do you know of the Million Woman March in D.C. on January 21st? There's an article in New York Times, Women in the World. I don't know, but I imagine there's going to be a lot of people protesting that inauguration. My movie recommendation, Bob Flav, The Day After, an upbeat TV for the whole family. Umar Shami, my wife, who had stomach ache from fear after it became clear Trump had won, told me the next day that she heard from a friend that a non-Muslim white lady with her two kids was standing outside a local Muslim Islamic school with a sign that read, "Free hugs, don't be afraid, we're still together." Also, my sister had a couple of non-Muslim white strangers come up and give her a hug saying, "Trump got elected, but we're with you." And there was a rally at UT Austin where students were chanting, "Say it loud, say it clear, Muslims are welcome here." But this is bad. In my addition to my kid, my wife, my sister, my nephew, my dad, who never cries, have cried. My wife said she felt like the president had died. Joseph Ballin, we're in day four of the illegal Brazilian-style coup in the U.S. The alleged president-elect who ran on draining the swamp is now filling his transition team with lobbyists. Li Fong from The Intercept and NYT is reporting Trump has selected lobbyist firms representing governments from South Korea, Saudi Arabia, Push for TPP, Verizon, Koch Brothers, Bear Stearns, Dean Foods. The one joy I get out of this is showing it to Trump supporters. Also, Iran says they'll start enriching uranium if Trump gets rid of the Iran deal. Of course they will. Not my president. CPW323, I feel like I've turned into a left-wing Glenn Beck overnight. A lot of crying, bemoaning the state of our republic. Just missing a chalkboard in fake Oval Office. Callous Whisper. As a fairly recent retired military member, the thought of Trump trying to navigate the international arena is harrowing. In the sense, I could easily see him having a temper tantrum that leads to a full-blown overseas war that commits us to years of economic record. You know, that to me is like I say, there's two sets of fears, right? There's the sort of what you could call like the Mike Pence as president fear, which is all the right-wing policies that we'll get domestically that are going to ultimately hurt a lot of people. And then there's just sort of, and people have asked me about this, like, how can he both be a rubber stamp and a loose cannon? And those are not mutually exclusive. I joked with Gallo's humor with a fellow retired vet that we're likely to get a call to go to this morass. Then it hit me, the magnitude Trump punched me right in the face, well beyond the social media and TV screens. Called, emailed my congressman immediately afterwards. Shawshank Redemption quotes, sums up my how many people feel. I guess it comes down to a simple choice, really. Get busy living or get busy dying. Perhaps people should wear clothes and stand in the way of bigoted assholes. Your Mazel Tov cocktail moment. That's an interesting idea. Jay Tingle, Saul's 10th suggestion, laugh at a poop joke. I'm doing it right now, work like a T. Is not correct. Try work like a charm or fits like a T. Oh, stop it. Nickname. President Mr. Trump. Oh, I sort of like that.
President Mr. Trump? I could see that.
I feel like that's one that I could use on like CNN or...
Yes, exactly.
President Mr. Trump. That's like one that... Like, it's you good. Son of a bitch, you called him president and mister.
Exactly. It's great. And if he sees if he sees us doing it, he'll be like, I can't read that one.
I like the respect.
I like the respect, but Kellyanne, I have a bedtime story, and can someone please tell me what that means?
President plugs, I think I couldn't get away with.
It's just two on the nose, or two on the plug.
Bush and Chains. Hey, is that mass murdering international arms dealer, multimillion dollar embezzler, mouthpiece payola for the Saudi regime, Hillary, been put in jail yet? Oh, my God. This is the way you make your reentry into this, Bush and Chains?
There's going to be a lot of gloating.
You must be psyched
that
she's not president. Congratulations. Logan Poppy. Thanks for saying about going outward. I gave it one day. Had to. Got so messed up in no way I was living in the house. However, the next day in Norfolk, Virginia, I was invited and accepted to go to a meeting at a local LGBT center. Straight male, never been invited before and accepted. The place was packed, standing room only. The question, where do we go from here? First thing is meet. Here's a picture and you can see it's overflowing. Also, you got a civic lead. Join it. Epish. I'm down for an MR meetup in Milwaukee. Dan Stark, Google safety pin and it's all over the top results. Mr. Psaki, it's imperative the DNC picks the right leadership because we only have 4 years to build and rebuild the party across the nation. This includes state legislatures because the census is happening 2020. Yeah, that's huge. That's huge. Panhandle liberal. I've never seen a level of smugness before like I'm seeing out of Southern conservatives. Yesterday, I am about stopping their children from harassing their children. The new talking point I'm hearing is let's just all agree and move forward together. It takes everything I can give to say, great, let's move forward together. What basic facts can we accept together before we start? I'm worried about the religious ideology Mike Pence will bring to the Senate. Not looking good down here. I understand. Mikey, quick question. I keep seeing idiotic explanations from people defending the Electoral College. I try explaining why it's a dumb, antiquated system. My anger and frustration get in the way of the general explain. Can you guys give me a few general talking points to help explain this? It overvalues. It's not one person, one vote. That's
it. I mean, it's one of those things that seems so simple and obvious that if you're talking to people that don't get the problem with it, maybe they're just never going to get it.
It's not one person, one vote. And it gives and who it favors are people who live in rural states. That's it. Neff just emailed you one of the safety pin articles. It's made its way up on HuffPo. Global warming is real. Didn't insider Democrats already float Tim Kaine as their preferred choice for 2020? Oh, yeah. Well, I think that's unlikely.
Is it political sadomasochism at this point to float Tim Kaine?
You know, I could see, let me put it this way. I could see a scenario where that involves war, that Tim Kaine could end up being a strong advocate on the foreign policy. Look, somebody's going to have to speak up about getting out of the Iran deal. It's not going to be Chuck Schumer.
Quite the contrary. Iran has built their whole weapons enrichment program because of imperialist actions by actors like the United States and Great Britain that have never respected the will, the anti-hegemonic will of the Iranian people who happen to express their revolutionary zeal in an Islamic fashion, which is none of our business.
I stand corrected.
I agree. Kat, I'm
going to
go to
my Democratic Party Congressional District meeting next week, and I'm not going to be a Minnesota nice, depending on what I hear. Guess what? I'm already active. They will listen. Start taking over your local Democratic Party, everyone. Art, I have to come up with a new IM system. Art, I support resisting tyranny at every possible pressure point, but don't believe rebuilding the Democratic Party is the path through this dark age. Plutocracy will never lose an election held under the United States Constitution. It's time for democracy people to start pioneering. Okay. Bucket of blood. I know this is probably a silly question, but is there any chance that some of the Electoral College won't vote? We talked about that, faithless electors. Petrus, while I appreciate the detail that you and Cliff got into, I think you're putting the cart before the horse. To use your own words, the Democratic Party needs to establish a new, unique identity that people can easily understand and act on, disassociated from Obama, Clinton. Whoever leads the party moving forward, if they're serious, needs to come out with a strong statement of purpose. Well, yeah, but I mean, the first thing that has to happen, you have to have different people in who are going to articulate that.
I sense that Obama might be kind of important, and I know people might not like that, but he's still very popular.
He's important. Yeah. He still is very, you're absolutely right. He needs to use that, for the sake of the country and to protect his legacy.
It'll be interesting to see what he does. I find it hard to believe that he's just going to be going back like, well, I'm done. I think he's,
got to pray to Mecca, write my memoirs.
Being an ex-president, I would imagine for a guy his age, being an active ex-president politically, not a bad thing. It's not like people are going to come to him and go like, Barack, it's really wrong for you to set the precedent where you would undercut a sitting president. No. Oh, you mean the guy who asked if I was an American? Well, guess what, mofo? I'm not an American citizen, so I can do it. Boo-ba-doo-ba-doo.
Guess what? He's right. No, I also think it's so illustrative to me of Obama's style that it's like, whether we like it or not, and I do have a problem with it,
He is going to be gracious to Trump. He is going to do all the things you're supposed to do. But the way he always sort of goes, like, the graciousness is the thing that sets up the speech in 6 months where he castigates him. Right? Like, that's the way he always does things. Like, I gave it a fair shot. I played the process. And now I'm forced to intervene.
Well,
that's his style.
He's the president right now. So
he has a different set of responsibilities.
He has a different set of responsibilities, but I agree with Masha Gessen in her New York Review of Books article. I do. I think she said right out of the gate that it is incumbent, not for them to say anything like we would say, but that Hillary and Barack should have been a bit more like Bernie Sanders, as an example. Not like to Harry Reid, but from her perspective of dealing with authoritarian leaders, there needs to be a clear marker from the beginning from everybody that this can in no way be normalized. And I have receptivity to that argument. But in some ways, that's irrelevant. I just think the way Obama works, he's going to be classy and appropriate. And in 6 months, that sets the stage for...
But in the intervening 6 months, there is a fundamental difference between being the president and the ex-president.
Certainly.
And I mean, I think that... I think it would have been much harder for him to do this as president. I mean, but, you know, Al Gore set a template, right, on some level about going out there and doing that. And he did it very, 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 very late, it seems to me.
I think far too late. Yeah.
But I think Obama, I don't know. You know, it feels like everybody's plans changed, right? Like, I mean, everything did change. We're in a post-11-8 world now. Jude, safety pin is cool. So is a Kaepernick jersey. 6 foot bald white dude. It sends a message too when I wear it. I get confused looks, angry looks, but I also get thank yous, nods, and I like your shirts too a lot. Richard Dangler, if you could go back in time to prevent Hitler from taking over, would you? Suddenly doesn't sound like a hypothetical time travel problem anymore. Staten Island Mike, you guys really need to make hold music into a show audio. I have a Trump name that's a little more pithy, rolls off the tongue. How about botched scalp surgery marital rapist Donnie?
Yeah, we should use that one on TV.
I think President botched scalp surgery marital rapist Donnie.
I think what the president, what is it? President botched scalpel surgery marital rapist Donnie. What he needs to do in tonight's State of the Union is the following.
If President botched scalp surgery marital rapist Donnie wants to unify the country... And the first lady, Mrs. Botched Scalp of Surgery Marital Rapist Donnie. Europe is no better. How about the Donald? That's what I think they should have said during the thing. But I like President Mr. Trump. Kyle, that's to me, that's equivalent of me wearing the six American flag lapel pins that I wore back during the Bush years, which I think I may have to dig out, find out where I saved those things. I guess it's also time to get one of those Donald Trump action figure dolls. And Kyle, what about crowdfunding for fines and penalties for the faithless electors? Yeah, exactly. I think that's happening. Rachel. Does Jamie Dimon speculation indicate a more corporate decisions Trump administration is bound to make that can help alienate Rust Belt voters in 2020? I think that's a little bit subtle, but yes. That's not just pro-corporate. That's pro-bank. We got to think about 2018. R.S. Div, what if we just kiss Trump's ass and point him at people he already doesn't like, right? Like Ryan or McConnell, get him active in LGBT issues where he seems more progressive. I think challenging him to a fight might not be the best strategy. Does Fox News have an audience when Trump starts up? Trump TV starts up? I don't know if Trump TV starts up. Maybe it does. Maybe Jared Kushner, that's what he goes and he does it. They don't call it Trump TV anymore. Raz Andy. Liberal Lee, more protests going on tonight, of course. I'm in Dayton, Ohio. We're meeting at the Courthouse Square, Main Street. Miami Valley Progressive Caucus is starting at that time. Boston Stoker going to pass out T-shirts. Yeah, protests are good. Hey, Sam says, hindsight, the Maryland electoral thing was from 2007. It's making the rounds on Facebook this morning. DX Fool. Hi, folks. Why did you turn this on just now? Well, that was a long time ago, bud. I've been here for 3 hours. We're going to have to go. I also enjoyed last weekend's three-way on Ring of Fire. Too bad Progressive Voices channel screwed up again and aired the show half hour early. All right. Two more calls, then we'll get out of here. I know a lot of people have been holding for a long time. I am sorry about that, folks. I'm sorry.
You turn this on just now.
313. 313, area code.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Sammy.
Sammy, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Lansing, Michigan.
What's on your mind, Sammy?
Hey, so I had two things I wanted to talk about. The first thing was more of just a shout out for trans people. I'm actually I started coming out as trans about a year ago, and I never expected this to happen. In so much as having everything being overturned like this all at once, in terms of having our government being completely red. And, so I was taking my time a little bit with, changing all my documentation and everything, but, seeing where things are going right now, I actually I'm going to try to rush my passport change, which is one way to get all your your gender marker changed and everything, to have your documentation all online and everything. So I just wanted to shout out for transequality.org /knowyourrights with hyphens between each word and /passports. And that would be for anybody else who's trans who's looking for assistance for that. Like, you have basically, I don't count on anything after December, essentially. That's one of the things that's.
I'm sorry. Is it the National Center for Transgender Equality? Is that the right site?
I'm not sure.
Send us an email.
Send
us an email or tweet at majority.fm with that.
Yeah, I'll follow this up with that. Yeah, I'll send you guys the link there.
What's your second point? I'm sorry you're having to make decisions about the pace of things and whatnot, based on this. So, I'm sorry you're going through.
Yeah,
you know.
Once ACH is gone, I have to keep my job. I never thought I would be so dependent.
Let me tell you how this ACA thing is going to go down. I meant to get to this. I'll probably get to it next week. But
yeah,
just so you know,
second point. But that's something that I'm definitely worried about.
They're going to get rid of the.
All
right, go ahead. You go, and I'll talk about it.
No, you go.
Well, as a side note, and I'll go through this more extensively. Next week. I believe what we're going to see is as early as late January or early February, mid February, the Republicans are going to repeal all of the things involved in the ACA that have to do with spending money. So they're not going to be able to impact regulations in February, but the exchanges, the expansion of Medicaid, the risk pools, all of this, they're going to say, we're going to roll this up by 2019. And they're going to say 2019 because they don't want this to happen before 2018 in the midterms. So there will be a 2017 and 2018 will be a bit of a grace period. Now, with that said, the regulations will still be in effect. It's quite possible that a lot of the insurance companies will bail from the exchanges because they know they're not going to be there in the future. They don't need to make a business there. They're already not making money. But the regulations that exist now will remain in place. But following 2018, the way that the Republicans will deal with the regulations, if they don't have a veto-proof, a filibuster-proof majority, and they may try and get the regulations off and allow the Democrats to filibuster it because they don't want this to go away until after the midterms. What they'll do at that point is make a deal, because they'll only have like a eight, let's say, Democrats to have to deal with, to get them to like give them part of the regulations in exchange for another way of providing subsidies. So what they'll do is they'll just basically do the Affordable Care Act and then sort of make it like an Affordable Care Act light down the road. But so just know, in terms of timing, that if you're dependent upon the regulations that stand now, those probably won't change for a year or two. If you're dependent upon the existence of the exchange, that existence will be a function of how many insurance companies are in there and how quickly they can get out. They probably won't go out this year, I mean in 2017, but they'll probably leave in 2018 maybe. So just go ahead. What's your second point?
Before I say my second point, I just wanted to say I was more concerned about losing pre-existing condition protection.
That's regulation.
I think these were definitely different things, but also trends, protections of the national.
They can't get rid of the regulations.
President Obama put in.
They can't get rid of the regulations through reconciliation process, which basically the reconciliation process requires that the measures directly impact the finances of the United States, of the government. So they can't get the regulations repealed until later. So pre-existing conditions are okay for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
For one more year,
okay,
at least.
And my second point was I was flipping between 538 and New York Times, like when it came down to Michigan, when it was like the big dead heat right there. And I was just wondering what your two cents were on, I was watching New York Times being 78% for Trump and then 538 being 78% Clinton winning. Like it was exactly the opposite. And I think like, I don't know. It seems like that puts the bias of how they're doing analytics and everything, and how the left views the value of polls and views the value of how we currently do analytics. So, what's your opinion on like where our trust will go in terms of data collection and really understanding like who's the best source for this?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, right now, I don't know. We need more analysis of what happened to figure, you know. And I certainly can't answer that question now. But, I mean, both because it's 3:10 and because, like, I think we need more information. I really do.
Yeah.
But
Thank you so much. I mean, as painful as it was to watch you go through that, it helped. I work nights, so like I was watching the whole time, and it helped you talking through it, you talking through with other people, watching the next day. Yeah, it helped me at least deal with some of that.
Well, I'm glad. I appreciate the call. Thanks, man.
Yep, thank you. Bye.
Colin from, we'll take one more call. Calling from a 773 area code. If you've been holding, folks, I'm sorry. Hold on. Did it go through?
Hi. I'm Jesus from Chicago. I was calling about earlier. You were talking about what Trump did to scare Muslims. He did say he was going to register Muslims. So the internment camp thing. Yeah, it's just yet. He hasn't said it yet.
I mean, and there's not, you know, if he finds it, I'm quite convinced if he thinks it's in his best interest to do it, he'll do it. If he thinks it'll get him, you know, he'll do it. He'll do it.
Yeah. And I was going to talk about also the It's called the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact.
Yes.
About the awarding the electoral votes. It's up to 165 right now, and I want to encourage your viewers to, if they're not, if their state isn't part of that, to call their state rep or something.
Yeah, it's good to push for. All right.
Okay, thanks.
Appreciate the call. All right, let me take take three more IMs, then we're getting out of here. I'm sorry, we're going late, and you know we're gonna tighten up this shit ship, ladies and gentlemen. Attorney Andrew, Chelsea Clinton wants to run for Congress in New York per New York Magazine.
Oh.
Also, this hits at me every few hours, but F, the Clinton campaign was so bad. Yes. One, he can unify the country by appointing Hillary Clinton to the Supreme Court.
That's okay. That's okay.
I don't think that's going to happen. The final IM of the day, the week, this horrible, 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 horrible week, folks. New York, Kate, upstate, Trump transition team includes Pence, Trump's three children, son-in-law, no Christie, Strom group of intellects there. All right, folks. See you Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know. Meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I guess somewhere the choice was made for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Takes you. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds